Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, my co-host Gabriel Montoya and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. I hope everybody's doing good. A lot of news happening in boxing. Not only the Peterson story, which my partner has been covering, and I've said it numerous times, the guy's up to his neck with the Peterson story. He's been able to speak to numerous sources and did a fantastic article on Max Boxing. Have him talk a little bit about that, you know. But Manny Pacquiao back in the news. He's got his fight coming up in June 9th with Timothy Bradley, the Desert Storm. And apparently his views of gay marriage has hit the top of the list of top news in the mainstream media. I heard that he was on Extra, you know, explaining himself. I didn't have a chance because we were going to be going live here on Leaving the Ring. But, you know, I mean, if this fight, Gabriel, between Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather ever happens, this is going to be the most interesting face-off. I mean, let's talk about the pre-nicknames they're going to have for each other. I mean, it's going to start off with Floyd Mayweather calling him the, hey, what's up there, gay basher, and Manny responding back with, hey there, woman beater. It's going to be hilarious. I mean, these two guys are not going to hold back of how much they dislike each other.
Well, all right, you know, first off, like, we had to do the show. That's not why I missed Extra. I miss Extra because I always miss Extra because I don't give a shit about celebrities and celebrity culture. I just don't.
Right.
I thought, you know, in the midst of the Lamont Peterson case, how important this is for sports in general and boxing specifically, who gives a shit what Manny Pacquiao thinks about gay marriage, much less Floyd Mayweather Jr. I mean, you know, I find it interesting and disingenuous of Mayweather to come out with his two different charities that he did, and everybody publicized it. One thing they didn't mention was that those were both court-ordered. And the guy's going away for domestic violence. I'd like to see him donate money to domestic violence, you know, like battered women's shelters. He's not doing that, that we know about. Maybe he doesn't publicize it. But for him to jump on this bandwagon, I support gay marriage, when in fact, like, this guy, Warren Wortham, a guy that emails me from my mailbag, or used to, sends me, so send me this email. I have to read it. I just read that Mayweather tweeted he supports gay marriage. Was he not just on 24/7 insinuating in negative fashion that Cotto was gay because he and his best friend assistant shared a bed during training camp? Also,
right.
is this not the same guy who insinuated that Lee Murphy was gay and threatened that he would whip his ass if he kept licking his lips while watching him train? Anyone on Chelsea lately and somewhat denounced his friendship with Eddie as though it would be a shameful friendship as Eddie was possibly gay. What's next? Floyd taking up the cause to eradicate domestic violence against women and their children from their baby daddy to the children's father? And, you know, I mean, not to kind of trash me, but I think both of them, who gives a shit what their stances are? These guys haven't fought in 3 years. There's multiple reasons why they want to get at each other in the press, like, just not having it. And it's just like giving a shit about Tiger Woods cheating on his wife. Who cares? You know, let's just deal with them as sportsmen, and let's deal with the major issue in our sport, which is this testosterone therapy and the problems with that, what's going on with Lamont Peterson's latest update. Seemed like everybody in the press editorialized him, called him guilty, and then walked away without really doing their homework in the first place. There was a great interview up today.
BBC?
By Richard Conway of the BBC.
I saw that in the morning when I got up, and talk about emotions there. You know, Lamont, I mean, you know, you have a face of guilt, and then you have a face of a guy that just screwed up. And Lamont's face, you could just see it. You know, he screwed up. He made a very big mistake. He didn't reveal what he was, what he was taking. Talk about a ripple effect here. And it was a wave. It was not even a ripple. It was a wave of how to really destroy a guy's career. And not somebody else that destroyed it, but in your own hands. You know what I mean? You have to live with the rest of your life knowing that
with one bad decision, one bad mistake, it all just goes down the drain.
It's, you know, this is the thing. You know, I've been, as we go along in this case, and we don't need to completely reiterate it, we assume that you're following it along, and hopefully you're reading all my stuff. I've written, I think, what, 5 articles now on this? I think it's 4 or 5.
It's 4, I think. I could be wrong,
4.
Though. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we did part 1, and then we did the one after that with Conte Catlin and Mr. Dick Pound. Yes, that is his real name. you know, where we're at right now, I think, as we focus along, at least where I'm looking, is kind of at the doctor, not kind of at the doctor, directly at the doctor, Dr. John A. Thompson of the Desert Oasis Clinic in Las Vegas, Nevada. And him specifically, but I think a lot of them in general need to be looked at, these TRT guys or, you know, the testosterone replacement therapy or anti-aging doctors, and what this craze really is. And this is the theory I've got at this point. Because the guy had a 3.77 to 1 TE ratio. This is the first test. And then the rest of the tests for VADA, they were negative, right? So it was probably the end of his cycle. This thing was 800 milligrams. It was a slow release, which lasts like 4 or 5 months. I think he maybe got misdiagnosed. He didn't have low testosterone, but they gave him testosterone, but they gave him such a small amount that it didn't take him past the 4 to 1. I don't know if that's by design or not. He didn't pass the drugs, or he passed the drug test in D.C., so it didn't matter. The guy didn't really know what was exactly in his system.
Right.
And so that's kind of where we are. And now he's realizing, you know, because when I talked to the doctor, there were 2 things that bothered me. One was I said, what was Lamont Peterson's TE ratio? He wouldn't answer that question. I asked twice. He wouldn't tell me. And like thinking, you know, shouldn't you know of all people? You're the guy that's an expert on this guy's testosterone levels. That's weird. So that was kind of one factor.
That's one red flag there.
Soy testosterone. Dude, testosterone that's synthetic is made either from soy or yams. It's a plant-based, substance. And it's made by one of those 2 things. So don't tell me that this is organic free-range chicken. Don't tell
right.
me that this is raised and treated nicely in the farm. This is synthetic testosterone. I think Peterson's now realizing what it was that the guy gave him. I don't think he realized it before. Maybe he did. I don't know. But there should I know on certain brands.
Right.
May cause a positive drug test if you're an athlete, do not use. I'd like to know if Lamont Peterson saw that label or if the doctor didn't show it. So there's problems there. See that label. It's hard.
Absolutely.
That's how I'm at in the case right now. You know, and seeing Lamont Peterson kind of so much apologizing, you know, like I got to let the fans down, let everybody down. I didn't full responsibility. I didn't get information. I think that's where they're at. And I believe them. I don't know about you. Do you believe it?
I do believe them, you know. But, you know, like I think we've talked about a little bit, we've touched on this about how the fact is no matter what, it's the end of the day, you're going to have the people that don't want to follow up. They just want to stick to the easy way of labeling the person as calling them, you know, a cheater. They don't want to go back and look into the facts. They don't want to go back and see for themselves that there was a mistake or there's something else could have came along. That's the bad part about, you know, some fans out there, you know, they're going to have that label and it's going to be really hard for them to shake out of it and stuff. I think I lost Gabe. Are you back with me, Gabe?
I am back, sir, with my new headphones.
Good. Yeah, because you were falling out there for a minute. You know, we got a good show for everybody. We got Latif Coyote coming on. He's going to talk about Antonio Tarver. He's got a matchup with him. It seems like it's getting more heated between the two of them. It was pretty heated in the beginning before the fight was even announced. And then we got Joseph Diaz, who's an Olympian and also needs some help and some funding to take his parents along with him to the London Games. So he's going to be calling in and talking to us about the experience of him qualifying and being part of the Olympic team for us U.S. United States. And then we got Jose Benavides Jr., who hasn't been in the ring for quite some time, out for due to injury. He's going to talk to us about his comeback. And I think we have some other guys that are scheduled that Gabriel's going to let us know who we got here on Leaving in the Ring.
Yeah, we're going to have Ola Afolabi. I'm still working on Jose Aguina, but I think we're also going to have him as well at 7 o'clock. But we're going to have Ola Afolabi at 5:30, so coming up in about 20 minutes. Always fun to talk to Ola. I don't think we've – have we had him on the show before, Dave?
You know what? I don't think we'd have. I could be wrong, though, because we've had so many people on the end of the ring. It's really hard to even keep track. I mean, it's funny, like somebody would throw out, like, you know, hey, can you have – this guy on your show, I don't think you guys ever had him on. And then I'll look back and I'll go, you know what, we did have him on, but we had him on when really there was no notice to him. You know, and we've done that many times. A lot of prospects have come through our show that later on, when they're a hot commodity, you know, we kind of forget that they were on, and then we're reminded they were on back at that time. You know, it's just the way we cycle through the whole show, you know, through the months and months and months, man, put a lot of work behind and doing a lot of interviews. I never realized how many interviews we do a week, Gabe, here on the show. You know, I mean, we literally,
yeah,
you know, it's a lot of interviews.
Okay,
I mean, but before we call in Joseph Diaz, let's pass in some fight fans that have been itching to talk some boxing here on the 3-hour boxing talk with myself, Dave Duenas, and Gabriel Montoya. Let's patch in. Let's get James, who wants to talk Bradley versus Pacquiao in the face-off. What's up, brother? You're on live right now and leaving the room.
Hey, this is David. Mr. David Duenas.
This is David Duenas, brother. How you doing?
Hey, I'm good, man. It's me, James, and Mr. Gabriel Montoya. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
All right, man. I don't know if you guys can hear me, but I'm driving my truck right now, but I have my headphones on, but...
we can hear you.
All right. Well, did you guys get a chance to check out that face-off with Bradley and Pacquiao?
I did. I had a chance to check it out, man. You know what? It wasn't that bad. I thought it was going to be terrible. You know, I thought there was going to be a lot more cheesy lines. There was a bit of the cheesiness there, but I like.
Well, hey, hold up.
Go ahead.
So what's up with Pacquiao? You know, he's talking about, you know, he's not supportive of the gay community or whatever, but he calls Timothy Bradley handsome.
You know
twice,
what,
man? I don't know what happened there.
You know what, though, man? I think, no, seriousness, I think that he was a little...
Oh, my goodness.
I think there was some nerves there, Gabriel. What do you think? You know, I mean, he keeps saying handsome. He didn't really know what how to answer Max Kellerman's question. You know, I mean, when Max asked him, what do you think of him?
I think Manny likes to diffuse his opponents by making them laugh, and he always does the giggly square when they square off or do the face off picture. They're always giggling at each other. He's always cracking up. I think he does it. It's kind of like Trinidad used to be. He'd be really smiley and friendly and all that, and it kind of gets the other guy to never hate him. Hopefully, it doesn't work with Tim Bradley.
I don't think it's weird, man. You know what? I don't think it did work on Timothy. Yeah, I mean, on that face-off, I could really see. I mean, to me, it looked like Tim was just burning a hole right through his chest. You know, by staring at him, staring at Freddie Roach. I mean, even Freddie kind of looked out of place for a bit. You know, he wasn't the normal Freddie who likes to talk a little bit of trash. He was really reserved in how he was going to answer his questions. It almost looked like Freddie Roach was actually thinking about the answer that was going to come out of his mouth.
Yeah, I agree.
I haven't seen it. I don't watch a lot of that.
I know.
I like the David Haye one. I try to stay away from the propaganda stuff and just kind of try to stick to the fighters. I mean, maybe when I was I don't know, those things, all the fake music, and I tried to watch 24/7, Mayweather Cotto, and I just was bored out of my mind. I didn't.
Ah,
I remember they used to do those cool, like, lead-ins to fights. Remember, like, it'd be like 2-3 minutes, and they'd tell the guy's story, and it was a nice lead-in from just,
right,
like, the, you know, Jim Lampley talking to ringside. They don't do those anymore. I wish they would.
Yeah. Well, see, the thing is, I'm, like, a new boxing fan, you know? So I'm, like, just jumping into it. I try to get as much as I can with the Twitter, and man, once I discovered Twitter, I was like, man, where have I been? I've been on Twitter for like a couple months, man. I'm like, man, all the boxing fans are over here. I thought I was like the only weirdo that, you know, just try to, you know what I mean? Like, who
right.
else talks boxing? And it's hard to find, you know, this community. And once I guess I found Twitter, and this whole bridge just, like, folded right on top of me, is great.
You know,
but,
what?
Like I said,
this is what I always say. Be a vampire, man. Bite somebody on the neck about boxing and infect them, and they become just like I do it all the time.
Man.
You know what? I got my compadres into boxing. My brother was going into the UFC. I brought him back to the greener side and the deeper side of boxing. You know, I've left.
Yeah.
I made him get away from the Tantaran underwears. You know, oily man wrestling around. I said, bro, you need to come back. You need to come back where we have nice cold beers and we sit back and watch it. Get two guys trying to knock each other's blocks. Hey, James.
Yeah.
I got to put you back on hold, brother. We got to patch in our first guest. Hey, thanks for calling in, okay? Don't hang up.
All right. 209, man. Stockton.
There you go, brother.
Right on.
That is great.
209 in the house.
209 in the house and a new fan to the sport. That's always good to hear. You know, we always welcome new fans back to the sport. And, you know, because they're missing out on a lot of good fights. Not just these mainstream fights, man. There's a lot of good fights out there that
they couldn't have it better than we did when we were coming up, if you think about it. They got streams. I mean, they could watch fights. You could start,
oh, yeah.
If you're smart about the computer, you can start, like, in the morning and just watch fights all day long, you know, just going stream to stream. Until you get to your HBO main event, I mean, if you did it right, you could eat and drink all day and still not fall asleep in the main event unless it was like a Hopkins fight or something, you know. And then it would be awesome, you know. We didn't have that when we were kids. You pretty much got like the big fight and that was it, you know.
I mean, you know, you had to go pick up a magazine. You had to wait for the magazine, and you know, had to read about the fights on the cards that were a month off, you know.
That's true. Yeah, the whole thing was shaky, you know. Yeah.
You know what's funny is that if a fight did end up on a print newspaper, mm-hmm. I would actually cut that clipping out and keep it. I actually have a bunch of clippings from old newspapers when, you know, Oscar or Tito or even like when Pernell Whitaker would fight or Mike Tyson. I kept a lot of those newspaper clips and stuff because it was really rare to see our sport in the newspapers, you know. But anyways, let's patch in our first guest, and let's talk a little bit about this young Olympian, London Games.
Junior. Hello?
Yeah, can I please speak to Joseph Diaz, Jr.?
Yes, this is him.
Hey, what's up, brother? This is Dave Duenas and my partner, Gable Montoya, for Max Boxing and Leaving the Ring. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing good, Dave. How are you?
Doing good, man. So, hey, congratulations, first off, being an Olympian, going out to London. So, how does it feel, brother? How does it feel knowing that you're going to be representing your country?
It's an honor, man. It's an honor just knowing that I'm going to be representing my country in the 2012 Olympic Games. I mean, just that itself is going to be a great experience, just being in London and being around all the elite athletes. And just knowing that I'm an elite athlete as well, it's just an honor, man. I can't wait.
Let me ask you this, because obviously leading up to be accepted as an Olympian to go and represent in London for the United States, it's got to be nerve-wracking. But after all that's done, after you pass and you qualify and you're ready to go to the Olympics, is there a set of different nerves for you and a certain a different set of pressure leading into this?
Yes, it is. It's actually because I was kind of nervous going into the World Championships because I don't know what the other countries had as far as skills, technique, and everything. So I was kind of nervous, but now that I got the taste of it, come 2012 Olympic Games, I'm going to be ready. I'm already ready for any opponent that's going to be facing me. So I'm going to be dedicated and I'm going to be focused. And the only thing that's on my mind is that gold medal.
Absolutely.
Hey, Joseph, this is Gabriel. I don't know if you remember me from when we were covering the Matadors, but congratulations, man. I'm so proud of you. You know, you always had such a nice, strong work ethic, and it's really paying off. Let me ask you this. What can you take out of that experience? Did that play into how you're fighting now? that experience of fighting as a semi-pro, no headgear, pro rules, against top guys all across the world.
Yeah, Gabriel, I remember you. It was an honor working with you when I did have the chance. And just, it was a good experience with the Matadors, just knowing that I'm fighting without headgear and I have to have a tighter defense. I have to be stronger. I have to be more alert. So that all paid off. That all took a toll. And now that I stopped fighting for the LA Matadors, my focus was on making the Olympic team. So I knew that with the Olympics, I had to have a tighter defense. I had to be sharp. I had to be quick. I had to be alert. So all that took a toll, and I used all that experience that I gained from fighting with the LA Matadors, training with Rasheed Warren, training with Coach Manny, everybody got me more ready. And here I am today, a 2012 Olympian. It's just an honor, man.
Talk about that experience. Shoot, that's a hell of a guy to have a sparring partner, Rasheed Warren. How has he improved your game? I mean, cause you came from out of Maywood, right?
Saint Amani Teamster.
What's that?
I came out of the Teamster, Saint Amani.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. My bad. But then you settled into the Rock, right? Where the Matadors train, or do you go back
Correct.
And forth between the two?
When I was with the Matadors, I was training at the Rock, and after the Matadors, I came back to Saint Amani Teamsters. And whenever I go to training camps for USA, I go to Colorado Springs at the OTC. So it's really good training. Everywhere I go, it's really great.
That's got to be fun, kind of just living the life of a warrior, just going to different spots and then just picking the best brains there, right, and just kind of working.
Yeah, man, everywhere I go, it's different techniques, different training, different environment, different vibe. So it's great just going to other gyms, just knowing that everybody's there just to train, just to work hard, and especially working at the OTC, working with all the Olympians now, and it's just great because everybody's just focused on getting that gold medal, so everybody's just training really hard, and it's a great environment, man.
You know, when you mentioned a little while ago that, you know, it's a little bit nerve-wracking because you don't get to see the other talent just yet, but as your coaches in the Olympics and stuff, have you had a chance to meet them, sit down with them, and if you have done all that already, do they sit you down and give you guys tapes of your possible opponents who you guys are going to be facing overseas?
Yes, I already met the coaches for the 2012 Olympic Games. I already met the team, and we just had a training camp with them going in for the girls, and we're going to the World Championships, so we went to camp with them. To get them ready for the World Championships. And it was great just getting to know all the coaches, Coach Abdullah. And he's a great coach. He figured out all of our flaws. He taught us what to do, especially because he knows and he's been to the Olympic Games already, so he knows how the international guys fight. So we're just going through tapes. After our sparring sessions are done, we're going through tapes and everything. So we'll be ready for whatever comes and whatever faces us. So it's really great, man, and I really think Abdullah, and we're going to be ready.
Let me ask you this. You know, there was the big scandal that happened, the big story in boxing, is the Lamont Peterson story. And you don't need to give your opinion on what you think of him, but I'm curious, in the gyms that you've been in, what's been the feeling? Because I know you're now an Olympian. You're going to be going through the Olympic-style testing. Has it caused any ripples or waves or people talking about it in the gyms you're working out in?
Not really. A lot of people are talking about the Lamont Peterson, but just knowing that I have to get tested just like that, I make sure that I'm taking the right supplements, and I make sure whatever I take, I look up on the USADA website just to see if it's prohibited. So whatever I take, I make sure that it's a positive. Like nothing's going to test on negative. So I already got tested a couple times already, and I haven't got a bad test yet. So I'm just going to keep taking what I've been taking, and I'm going to be ready for the Olympic Games.
Does it make you a little bit more alert though? I mean, being a young athlete and seeing that some of these fighters, you know, that are a bit older, that are making these mistakes of trusting the people that are surrounding them when it comes to physicians and conditioning coach. So, Joseph, do you kind of get a little bit worried that you may not find out fully what's being put into your body?
Yes, I whenever someone ever tells me to take something, I make sure I look up the USADA. I look it up on USADA before I even take it, because I never want to get a test. I never want to get tested bad, and I don't want that to go down on my resume or anything, because I know that that's a big thing right now. And I know for a fact that whatever I take, I look up before the USADA on USADA before I take it. So whatever I take, it's already cleared out on USADA, and I'm good to go.
With the coaches right now that are working with you, you know, one of the biggest problems we've had here in the States is that our point system has always been up against us, because a lot of our fighters go over there with more of a pro style. With the coaches right now, and them being that they've gone through this experience already, are they trying to switch you up a little bit? Are they trying to get you caught up to that speed of the point system? Or are they keeping the way you have performed and the way you've gotten yourself to that point already?
Yeah, there's a USA fights a lot like a pro already. When we're still amateur, we still have that pro style. We just like to pick our shots and land the body shots and everything. And once we go international, it's kind of different, because they like to fight on the outside and just get the points. But right now, Team USA, we're working on getting our points, still landing the effective shots, landing the cleaner shots, and still be effective with a lot of power with our shots. We have a good strength conditioning coach over there at the training camp at the OTC, and when I'm training at my house, I have a good strength conditioning coach as well. His name is Daryl, and we're doing good. Man, we're going to be explosive. We're going to be quick, and we're gonna do good in the Olympic Games.
I can hear the excitement in your voice, Joseph. I can hear it, Darryl, man.
Daryl Hudson? Are you working with Daryl Hudson?
Yes, correct. I'm working with Daryl Hudson, and he's a really great strength conditioning coach. He's gonna get me ready.
That sounds fantastic. Yeah.
Daryl's going to get you ready. Yeah, Daryl's good people, man. He's that's awesome. I mean, you're working with Is BB working with you as well, or is it just Daryl?
It's Daryl. Yeah, Daryl by himself.
Okay.
That's
congratulations,
good.
Man. I'm looking forward to this. I cannot wait for the games to start.
I know. I'm excited about these games, man.
I know. Team USA, man, we have a really strong team right now. Everybody's humble. Everybody's dedicated. Everybody's focused. Some of the team just got back from Brazil. We got two gold medalists. We got one bronze and one silver. So we're doing really great. Now we have nine people going to the Olympic Games for Team USA representing as boxers. So it's going to be really great, man. We're all ready.
Sounds good. Let's talk a little bit about this fundraiser that you're having. I believe it's for your parents to go with you to London. Am I correct?
Yes, we're having a little fundraiser, but we just had a car wash last Saturday. It was a good turnout. We had about 150 cars. We sold, we washed cars for $7 a car, and whoever washed the car got a signed autograph and a photo and everything. So it was a great turnout. And right now we're selling shirts for $20. So whoever wants to support me and support my parents to get out there with me, it'll be greatly appreciated.
Now, how do they go about purchasing this shirt? Where do they go? Do they go to your website or an email? How are they going to do this?
Yes, they could go to my website on Facebook, Joseph Diaz Jr., or they could contact me on Twitter, at Joseph Diaz Jr., or they could just reach my dad on his cell phone. His cell phone number is 626-274-4463. If anybody wants to purchase and support me, it will be greatly appreciated, and my dad will make sure to answer that call and give you guys what you guys want.
Well, there you go, fight fans. You know, call up his old man, or find him on Facebook or Twitter. Purchase a shirt and help out the young Joseph Diaz Olympian, hopefully coming home with the gold, so that his parents can go out there to London as well and celebrate with him when he gets that gold medal put around his neck. Well, brother,
awesome, man.
Hey, thanks, man, for calling in. We're definitely going to be rooting for you. Hopefully we can catch up with you before you take off. If not, maybe speak to you while you're in London. Obviously, we're going to be rooting for you. It's always good. It's always, you know, it's exciting to see a young kid like yourself come up and follow their dreams and hopefully continue bringing their dreams to realism.
Thanks a lot, Dave. I appreciate it, man, and I'll make sure that I'm going to be at 100% going into the Olympic Games. I'm going to be ready. I'm going to be focused. I'm going to be determined to get that gold medal and bring it back to the United States. So thanks again for this interview, and I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Gabriel, and you guys take care, and God bless.
Same here, brother. You take care.
Good luck to you out there.
Joseph Diaz Jr., young Olympian going out to the London Games representing the United States. UK fans, be sure you show him some love out there when he's out there performing. And Fight fans, like I said, call his dad up or find him on Facebook or Twitter and purchase one of those shirts. Help him out. Help his parents go out there and celebrate a great moment that he's going to have in the London Games. I think this is by far one of the best teams that we have so far, man, in a long time. You know, a lot of good names in the Olympic boxing team.
Dude, yeah, it's gonna be good. Terrell Gaucha is another guy, middleweight guy. It's gonna be. We have to do an Olympic show and get them all on there.
Yeah,
these guys are. It's gonna be a fun team this year. I think they're all loaded for bear. You got some guys with that WSB experience. Rashid Warren making his third Olympic appearance. He's going for that gold finally, hoping to get it. I can't wait for the games. And I think there's going to be more, because women's boxing is the first time that it's in the Olympics this year. Marlon Esparza is kind of the one that they're really pushing to be a star. I think maybe Nike or Coke are both involved with her already, looking to make her kind of the Mary Lou Retton of the boxing team. She's got more of a pro style, though, talking to David Avila, who's a bit of an expert in female boxing, and particularly the amateurs as well. I mean, he knows the whole system.
Right.
He was telling me this weekend that he thinks, you know, while she's got a very great pro style, she's going to have a little trouble in the Olympics because she's got, like, she likes to body punch, and she's had to adjust her game to come upstairs, and that's not really her game. So that should be interesting to watch. The whole thing, because they're focusing on the women, I think the men were going to get a lot of attention too, because we got such a strong team. Hopefully they don't put it on at like 3 a.m, you know, on a Tuesday.
I know.
You actually see it. They always do that to us now. I'm like, come on, you guys.
I know.
They'll
put something else up that nobody watches, you know, and they'll throw boxing at 3, 4 a.m. in the morning. Or sometimes they don't even let you know when they're going to throw it up. It's terrible, you know. But that's what I was talking about with Diaz, about the point system, you know. I mean, that's what we have failed at, is understanding that it's a different style of boxing entering these games, because those body shots, they're not even counted. And the way the point system works is it's a bit confusing, because if I remember correctly, it's all three judges have to push the button simultaneously in order to make that point count. So kind of weird. I mean, I don't know if they're still doing that. I'd have to catch up with the Olympics and stuff and of the system again, but been so busy with the pro.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah, I people always like, how are you going to do the amateurs more? I'm like, you know, I like the Rams. I don't really follow, like, college ball. You know, like, oh, we got a rookie? Well, let's see how he does in the pros, because that's really all that matters to me. Even over the years, like, I'm kind of like the Lakers, you know. I don't really care about the regular season. You know, give me the playoffs and I'm all there. I'll check in and make sure, you know, I know who's on the team and how we're doing. But I'm not going to watch every damn game. I just don't have that kind of time in my life.
Amateur,
you know, give me the playoffs. And that's how I feel about the pros.
Right. You know, it's almost, the only thing is that in boxing, the amateurs is almost like the high school football games. There's just so many. You can't keep up with it. It's not like college ball. At least with college ball, you could see it all. And if we had boxing in colleges, it'd be selective. We could actually hang with that and be able to cover it and watch it all. But come to amateur, there's so many different clubs and so many different parts. It's really hard. Only way I really find out about an amateur fighter that is decorated or something is that either they made enough noise to get some type of coverage and recognition, or somebody gave me direction to them, you know, and that's how I end up catching wind of them and start following them and watching them. You know, Brandon Gonzalez is one of the kids that I knew of the amateur games, and, you know, and when he turned pro, I already knew who he was when he turned pro, because I had watched him when he was an amateur. So there are some amateur fighters out there that are very worth watching and stuff, but it's just hard to catch them.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm back. I'm here with the interim WBO cruiserweight champion of the world, Mr. Ola Afolabi. Welcome to the show, Ola. I'm here with my co-host, David Duenas. You're on Leaving in the Ring. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Ola, this is the first time we've had you on the show. So you fight primarily, it seems, overseas, although you've been knocking people out like crazy. And if people have missed those, I don't say they can call themselves a boxing fan. But let's just go back a little bit to the beginning to kind of introduce you to everybody. How did you get started in boxing? You're from Olawale. That's your birth name, is Olawale. You're from London, UK. You fight out of California. Your alias is Kryptonite. How did you get started in boxing? How did we not hear about you sooner?
Yeah, I started in London, and I just trained for a couple of years, but I never had any amateur fights. So, you know, I got in trouble in England, and I needed to get away from all of that. So I came over to America, and I tried to have amateur fights. And they said because I wasn't a citizen, I couldn't have amateur fights. So I went ahead and turned pro, and I lived in the gym since 2000 at a wild card, just watching every fighter that came in, from Michael Moore to James Stoney to Francois Botha to Bernard Hopkins, and I just kind of stole everybody's style, put it together, and, you know, I turned pro, and it's apparently been working for me so far. So, you know, that's pretty much my boxing career.
This is one of my favorite stories, and I've never heard you tell it. I've heard other people tell it. Is that you out James Toney to the point where he jumped out of the ring and like got really angry at you? Can you tell that story?
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people don't like when you use their own style against them because they don't know how to, you know, handle their own style.
Right.
So I've been watching James Toney from like 2000, and like around 2003, we jumped into the ring, and Freddie told me to spar him, and we were sparring, and I was moving the same way he moved, and he hated it. So he started going off on me about, go back to Africa, you African. So while we were sparring, I just told him, I was like, I don't think you know your history. Just because you're in America doesn't mean you're the strong Africans. The stronger Africans traded the weaker Africans for liquor and mirror. So for you being over here doesn't mean you're better than me. Just because you're the weaker African. And he got mad. He jumped out of the ring. He picked up the trash can. He threw it at me. I fell on the floor. We were wrestling. And then he was
hold
like, go get my gun. I'm going to shoot this guy.
Hold on. When you were telling him this, can you kind of describe his face expression? Because, I mean, if you told me something like that, I would have a grin, and my grin would slowly just start melting off of my face.
He was pissed because he used to be in the star of the show, you know. Like
right.
When James Toney spars, everybody stops and watches. So we had a crowd watching us. And the fact that I was going back at him, he just hated it. And he was like he was tired, you know, out of shape. So he didn't have enough gas to come and crush me. So he couldn't beat me verbally, and he couldn't beat me physically. So he just flipped. And he was like, go get my gun. I'm going to shoot this guy. And the next day he came up to me and said, hey, what's up? Good work. James is just like that. He'll snap on you one day, and the next day he forgot what happened, and he's like, cool with you. So it happened like two or three times he threatened to shoot me, but I just let it go.
Yeah.
James, though, you know, if you know James, he's not a bad guy, but if you get in his head, he flips.
No, yeah, he's still like politically incorrect. I mean, I think he still calls Steve Kim, you know, that Chinese guy, you know.
He doesn't care who you are. I mean, I've seen him talk to Freddie, and Freddie just like him and Freddie go back and forth. They love each other, but you know they go at it. You know that's just how it is. You can't take anything too serious.
That's pretty true. How much? As a wild card, that's where I know you from. When I was there training, that's how I think we met. And I just, when you worked, I think you were just always there working. How much do you attribute your time there to your evolution as a fighter?
Oh, you know, like the beginning of my career, I mean, I give everything to wild card because, like I said, I never had any amateur career. I just copied everybody that came in there. And everybody that came in there seemed to be like a top fighter, so I couldn't go wrong. I was just copying everybody and using their style. That helped me a lot in the beginning of my career. But when I got to the point where I started fighting like the top fighters, it kind of, all the stuff I learned in the wild card was kind of like working against me because I really didn't develop my own style. I just copied everybody else. So when I got in the ring, I would do what James Toney did. If it didn't work, I would do what Bernard Hopkins did. If it didn't work, I just kept on changing. And that never gave me a chance to focus on my own style. Now, when I signed with the Klitschko's and I had Fritz Stunek in my corner, he totally turned my style around. I was like, wow, I didn't know I could, you know, fight like this. I was just used to copying everybody else. And the bad part of that is when the crap hit the fan, I didn't know what to do. I didn't have my own style, you know.
Right.
Like everybody's style didn't work. I just freaked out and I just, you know, and I tend to adopt everybody's bad habits also. Like James Toney, his style is amazing. He's slick, but he's also lazy, and I adopted that. And his style makes you lazy because you just sit back and wait to counter. So mm-hmm. when I signed with the Europeans and the Germans, the way the Germans work, man, it's ridiculous. It's like their cars. They don't play around. They work hard. And I just got into that whole German style, and I'm doing okay.
Yeah, you're doing all right, man. That's for sure. You know, that's funny that you mentioned that you adopted these styles because, you know, when we talked about your fight coming up with Huck, me and Gable were saying how in the beginning it really looked like you didn't even know yourself, like you weren't comfortable in your own skin yet, but that you finally have discovered who you really are, and you're shining like that. How when you sit back and look at your career, when did you start realizing that huge change, that huge difference in identifying who you are from the past?
You know, it really started in 2009 when I knocked out Enzo Macanelli. I went in there. I mean, I did everything you could ever do in boxing. I did it wrong. You know, I had no amateur. I had like 6 trainers before I even had my first professional fight. And I got in there and I just, you know, 2009, and I was sparring everybody. I became a sparring partner. You hear this term a lot. He has a sparring partner mentality, but you don't
right.
really know what it means. Even I didn't know what it means. Everybody was like, yo, you got a sparring partner mentality. I was like, I'm not a sparring partner. I'm going to be world champion. I thought that in my head, but when I got into the ring, I still had that sparring partner mentality. I didn't have that, there's no way you're going to beat me. I had that mentality like, I have enough to beat you, but if you beat me, I tried my best. You know, I really didn't believe myself. But in 2009, I pretty much went in there to fight Enzo Macanelli. I was 38-1 or 37-1 underdog, and I knocked him out. And from then on, I was like, maybe I could really do this. Then I went on to fight Marco Hook, and I thought I won, and I lost a close decision. But at one point, I mean, if one of the judges had called it 1 point in my way, it would have been another draw. So, I mean, from then on, I thought I won too. But, you know, thinking doesn't help. I still got to get the win. Then I signed with the Klitschko's, and I saw these guys. They're like on top of the world. They're the best heavyweights in the world, and they were working out harder than I was. And I was like, something's wrong here. So I picked up my game, and since I've been in camp with them and seeing how they do it, how they eat, even when they're not. I mean, I'm back in the gym already. I fought like 2 weeks ago. I'm already back in the gym. There's no excuses now. So I believe I can do it. You know, I started around in 2009. And now, pound for pound, I would say Hook is probably the best cruiserweight in the world. And I believe I've beaten him twice. So, I mean, my confidence is through the roof right now. And I believe in myself. So whoever fights me next, I'm sorry. I just got to do what I got to do.
You think, you know, because that first fight I thought you won, I didn't think it was like absolute robbery. It wasn't like, you know, 8-4 and they
right.
just gave it to him. But it was a close fight and they gave it to him. I thought you won. But you got a draw in Germany, which is like a miracle in this last fight. And you even kind of seemed to be okay with the draw when we talked the other day at the gym. What do you think is the difference? Why did they give you a draw and not rob you this time? Do they respect you more because of the run you've been on, knocking dudes out and the kind of win that you've had? What do you think it is?
Or
you train over there?
I think what it is I really showed up to fight this time. Like the last time I was kind of just sitting back and waiting to counter, I took the fight to him this time. The rounds I won clearly. Before, I was like, because Marco Hook's style is he steals the round in the last 30 seconds. And I don't know since when a fighter would win 2.5 minutes and then the other fighter was still 30 seconds and would get the round under the judges. I don't know how they do that. I mean, if you win 2.5 minutes, you win the round. But anyway, this time I kind of took the fight to him. And a lot of people don't understand how much pressure is on a fighter when he knows he has to get a knockout. And you can see in the other guy's face, he's just trying to survive. He just had a high guard. He's like, if this guy doesn't knock me out, I'm going to get the decision. So that's why around round five, I changed my style, and I pretty much – I mean, if I box safe, there's no way I'm going to get the decision in Germany. I don't see it, you know. I kind of have to take the fight to hook, and that's what I did. And a lot of people don't understand that. They're like, oh, it was working for the first five rounds. Why did he change his style? Because I did this the first fight, and it didn't work, so let's make it a war. And that's what I did, and I felt like the fans were entertained. I felt like I won the fight, and, you know, the judges. Funny thing is, this time what helped also was we got a pick in the referee because I'm with the Klitschko's, and they got a little juice. It's not like the old promoter that just took what Sauerland gave them. We had a pick in the referee. We picked the referee. We picked our own judge. They picked their own judge, and then one judge was picked, I guess, by the WBO. And the funny part of that is, our judge that we picked suddenly got sick, so he couldn't come to the fight. So Sauerland got to pick another judge, and that judge they picked was the one that gave it to Marco Hook. So I'm like, something's funny here. But either way, the German judge called it a draw. So, I mean, if a German judge can give you a draw, you can say whatever you want to say about the British judge giving it to me because it's British. But the German guy gave it to – also called it a draw, so – hey, man, like I say, I'm not really happy with the results, but it could be worse off.
It could be worse off. You know, I thought a loss would have been catastrophic, right?
Oh, loss would have been devastating. I would have lost my interim title. I would have had to start from scratch. I mean, it's crazy. Now, the way this is, I don't see why they wouldn't give us a rematch. You know, I mean, the fans love the fight. You know, this is good for WBO. This is good for boxing, and this overall good for cruiserweights because it's like everybody looks over us. You know, we're putting on great fights. You know, heavyweight fights are kind of slumping lately. It's time for us to kind of slide in the spot, and what better way to do it than put on good fights?
That was a great fight. Yeah. It was entertaining is an understatement, you know. With them shots that you were landing, it looked like you wanted to take his head off and really end it. When that final bell did ring, and that 12th round was just epic, brother. It was just, you know, phenomenal.
Oh,
I think everybody that was watching it on a stream had to be standing up and clapping and beer spilling all over the place. It was that great of a round. But right when you hear the bell ring and it you know, set off and the round is over, what's going through your mind? I mean, because it looked like you were trying to knock him out so it didn't go into the hands of the judges. But what was going through your mind?
My trainers told me this is the last round. If you even lose this, if you lose this round bad or you even lose it, they're going to give it to Marco Hook. So just go give it all. And I went in there and, you know, I was just swinging for the fences. I was exhausted. He was exhausted. And it was just about who's got the biggest heart. And I give Marco Hook credit. He's got a huge heart. You know, he came, he was swinging, I was swinging. And when that bell went off, I was like, God, I hope I did enough for them not to rob me. You know, it wasn't that I lost the fight. I was like, I wasn't even thinking I lost the fight. I was just like, I hope I did enough for them not to rob me. And apparently I did because I know they're trying to rob me and they give me a draw. So that's like they had no choice, you know. Even Germans are telling me, I'm getting emails on Facebook every day, Germans are telling me, you won that fight. If you got a draw at home, you know you won that fight. But, you know, to me, fighting in other people's countries is really not a big deal. I had my first 13 fights or 14 fights in America, and they always introduced me from London, and I always fought the hometown boy, and I got booed and all that. So I don't care about all that. I mean, it just, the way I see it, once I win the belt, I can call myself a true world champion. Because back in the day, when you called a fighter world champion, Muhammad Ali and all those guys, they went to Germany to fight. They went to Europe. They went to Africa to fight. All these world champions, they don't fight out of their country or don't fight out of Europe. How can you call yourself a world champion? You might as well call yourself a European champion. You know, you got to go out. Look at what's his name? Arthur Abraham. He came to America, and he lost that fight. You know, if that fight was in Germany, he would have won that fight against, Andre Ward. It's just that's the way things go. So you got to – I don't care. I just go wherever the check's at. They sign a check. I show up in that fight. It's a job.
It looks to me, too – I just want to point this out. But, you know, when a guy goes overseas, I've noticed like a guy like Orlando Salido and yourself, you know, even like Glenn Johnson, it just seems like you guys learn more and you become more craftier and you end up, even though it takes a little bit of a while for you guys to get the appreciation is really thick. It's not thin.
I really
hope
so. Go
ahead, Gabe.
I mean, because I'm putting in work. I got to say, though, like fighting in America, it's one thing. I mean, you it's easier to get knockouts in Europe than it is in America, but you will put in more work in Europe than in America because this Europeans, their style is not really like the top class. America has the skills and everything, but they have the strength and physical conditioning in Europe. So if you go to Europe and you're not in shape, they will just outwork you. So I got
right.
the best of like two continents right now. I've copied everybody in America. I know I got instincts and I can be slick and all of that. But now I'm fighting Europeans that you have to be in shape to fight. I got the best of both worlds. The way I see it now, I'm not scared of going 12 rounds. Like, 12 rounds is nothing to me. I could go 12 rounds in my sleep now. You know, so if I knock you on the first or I knock you on the 12th, it doesn't matter to me.
Right.
Wow. You're saying you don't see why they would give you a rematch or a third fight with Marco Hook. I'm thinking, well, I don't know, the first five rounds? Because, like, the first fight, I thought you won, but like you said, you gave them room to take it away from you by being a counterpuncher. Second fight, you took it
yeah.
to him, but it almost felt like you hit a wall of conditioning at some point because I don't think you ever fought this way in a fight for this long, like for all 12 before. Do you think, just if we're following the pattern of you getting a little bit better each fight, can you be that much better and just dominate him this next one and kind of mix up the rounds that you fight one way and then, you know, do you think you could just be that much clearer, or are you guys so perfectly matched that your strengths and flaws are just always going to be this kind of fight?
I mean, absolutely. I feel like, I mean, I came right after the fight. I came to the hotel room. I watched the video because it was on YouTube within like 1 hour. And my boxing, because I never really had any schooling or anything growing up, most of my boxing has been like, I've been doubting myself in the ring. And when I watched this, the first five rounds, it's like I didn't get tired. I just mentally I was weaker than I should have been. You know, I got in there and I did something good for five rounds. And I thought to myself, you know what? Let me switch it up a little bit because they're going to steal the rounds away and I can't keep up this pace. I told myself I couldn't keep up this pace when physically I could. You know, so it was just about me being sure about myself. And I look at this fight, I look at most other cruiserweight fights out there. No, in the last 5 years, I haven't seen anybody or any fight that they threw harder and faster punches that much in a 12-round fight. And I survived that for 12 rounds. So mentally now I'm like, I could do anything for 12 rounds. You know, I'm in shape. I've been in there with the best cruiserweights in the world, and I'm hanging 12 rounds, and I'm throwing heavy punches in the last round. I can't do anything wrong. All I can do is go in there and do what I know I can do. So mentally, I'm ready. Physically, I'm ready. So from now on, I mean, my game's improved. And it like you said, when you fight better fighters, you get better yourself. So the way I see it is no other cruiserweight can hang with me right now. I'm hot right now.
<Who's next? laughs> You're hot right. You are hot right now. You're always a stylish man. You're hot wherever you go. You got that little sports car. You're driving the motorcycle right now. Which one are you on?
Yeah. I'm on a Harley Davidson right now.
You gotta be careful, man. Anthony Jarrell,
I know.
He's filled, you know. Does that bother you?
What?
The Anthony Jarrell, like, he's broke his neck, dude. I mean, I know you like to live
he
fast.
Broke his,
yeah, on his motorcycle.
He broke his neck doing what? On a motorcycle?
He broke his leg on a motorcycle, yeah.
Oh, shit. Well, yeah. I do certain, you know, everything's dangerous. My job, first of all, is dangerous.
Right.
Hell, you know? So
yeah.
I get on the motorcycle. It's just, I just cruise. I don't go crazy fast. I don't get on the freeway. I mean, I live in Hollywood. You can get anywhere in Hollywood with back streets in like 10, 15 minutes. I'm doing it. I'm just cool on my bike. I'm not racing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have a sports bike. I have a Harley Davidson, even though it's a big engine bike. I don't push it to the limit. The tickets are crazy in L.A. I don't do more than 40, 45 miles an hour. So, nice. I mean, but accidents can happen no matter how careful you are. I'm just,
right.
just,
out here,
just
yeah.
living my life day by day, you know. We work hard. We want to enjoy it, you know.
So who's next, man? Or do you even know?
You have to talk to like Tom Loeffler with K2 Boxing because I don't know. We're trying to get a rematch because Marco, who keeps his belt, I keep my belt, so I'm still mandatory for him. So, and the guy that was supposed to fight him, which was between Alexander Povetkin and Firat Aslan, they were fighting to fight the winner of Hook and I, and they also had a draw, you know. So pretty much WBO is kind of stuck right now. It's between me and Hook again, but he's saying he doesn't want to fight till October. He wants to take some time off, but I'm not going to wait till October. If a fight comes up, I'll take it meanwhile, and we'll face him again in October.
What about cherry picking like a heavyweight?
I'll fight Povetkin. I mean, if he shows up the way he showed up against Hook, I'll knock him out. I mean, there's no two ways about it. Hook
yeah.
should have knocked him out because he was tired from the third round. There's no way you're
right.
going to get in the ring with me. And in the third round, you're tired, and we have 9 more rounds to go. I'm sorry, I'll tell you apart. I mean, he was done in the third round. The only problem is Hook headhunts a lot. If he had gone to the body or threw a couple of uppercuts, he'd have had Povetkin out of there.
Yeah.
But I'm sure Povetkin would never underestimate another cruiserweight ever again. So if
yeah,
you fight him, he's bringing his A game.
Hey, I got a really quick question for you, Ola. On Twitter, S. Busy's asking, have you ever sparred either one of the Klitschko's? And if you have, who hits harder?
Well, you know, there's a difference between the two brothers. I sparred both of them. Vitaly, the older brother, he spars like, he's like Spider-Man. You know, his punches come from all crazy angles. But he just spars to, like, sharpen his game. He doesn't spar to hurt, like, sparring partners and all of that. I've seen him hurt sparring partners. He's hit me hard before, but that's not his ultimate goal. His ultimate goal is to get in shape and learn how to, you know, just sharpen his game. Now, the younger brother, wow, he gets in that ring and sparring like he's trying to kill somebody. Like, he hit me once.
Right.
And I had a headache for, like, 3 days. And I said to myself, there's no way he's ever going to hit me like that again. So when I get in the ring with him, I'm on that bike. I'm just cycling around him. Like, you're not going to hit me clean. So
you're not on the Harley when you're in the ring with them. You're on a sports bike then instead.
Yeah, I'm on that Tron bike. That bike they got in the movie Tron. I'm
right.
sipping and sapping around. Because like, if he hits me, I mean, that guy, I've seen him knock out sparring partners. His older brother doesn't go out to kill you. The younger brother is like, he spars like hard, like he just wants to hurt somebody. And I'm like, no kind of money is worth that. I don't want to do that. So I stopped
yeah.
sparring him about a year ago. You know, I've seen, so, I mean, screw that.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you something. Just for what you just said. So there's no shame in just getting on your bike. I sparred my first heavyweight yesterday, and this guy just
mm-hmm.
put me in the corner and just, I mean, damn, like my side bone hurts. You know, he just kept pounding like my elbow. You know, was guarding my side,
uh-huh.
and he just kept pounding it into my hip, and that whole area just fucked. So but I felt, like, embarrassed to just keep moving because I could outmaneuver him. I was faster. And some dude was like, quit running like Amir Khan. And so I stopped and kind of settled down. So you're saying there's no shame in just getting on your bike when you're in with a giant
there's
guy.
There's no shame in that. If he's twice the size of you or he's the same size as you, there's no shame in moving around because – guess what? Those same people that are saying you're moving like Amir Khan, when you're at home nursing a headache and a bleeding nose and a broken rib, they are nowhere to be found. Okay? You can either be at home nursing your nose and your rib, or you can be ordering pizza and watching Netflix, and you're okay.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Just I'll get on that bike and frustrate that big guy and just tag him whenever I can tag him. You know, there's
absolutely.
No winner or loser in sparring. You don't have
true.
Anything to prove in sparring.
Exactly.
It's not like somebody's scoring the rounds.
It's just a game.
So they,
yeah.
you get out the ring, they're like, hey, man, you fight like a girl. Like, guess what? That's not my job.
Yeah.
You know, my
right.
I'm not a professional boxer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, Ola, thank you very much, man, for calling in and speaking to us here on Leaving Ring. It was really fun. We got to have you back on again so we could chop it up a little longer. Hey, and I wish you the best luck in whatever fight comes up for you. We're going to be rooting for you all the time.
Thank you very much. You know what I was thinking? I don't mind taking the win of Coyote and Tava.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to have Coyote on. We're waiting for Coyote right now to call in. We're going to speak to him for a short bit, you know?
I don't mind the winner. It's a job. We could be friends after.
I like it. I like it.
Well, intern, let him know.
I'm not here to say intern. As far as I'm concerned, Ola, you're a champion. Thank you. Thanks for
Thank
so much
you.
For coming on, man. You enjoy this beautiful
Thank
L.A.
God.
Day. All right,
Thank
man.
You. You too. Bye.
I will. Take care.
Dude, he's fun, dude. Oh,
yeah.
You know what, man? I mean, he said something, you know, where he could fight, you know, he fights the best cruiserweights in the world, you know, and it's evidence that not only does he fight the best cruiserweights in the world, but he keeps up, he defeats the best trash-talking guys in the ring, you know, with James Toney. If you could shut up James Toney and get him all ballistic on you, you're doing something pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
That is hilarious, man. What a great story.
I love that. I'm hot right now, you know? He's feeling it, dude. I saw him at the gym at Wildcard. I stopped in for like a couple seconds the other day, and he was there, and Freddie was there, and he just looked so confident, like he was saying. You know, he just feels good with where he's at. I didn't get the sense that he was bummed out by the draw. He just was like,
right.
So he got his belt, I got my belt. We could do a third one. I think that's probably the most lucrative fight for him, certainly. You know, it's a fight that everybody wants to see, but shit, he's right. He could get the winner of Tarver Coyote, and we could just go there.
I know, and he just called him out. He said that he loved to fight
that's
the winner
good money
of,
fight.
Latif Coyote and Antonio Tarver, you know. I think we got Coyote with us here on Leaving the Ring. Coyote, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, how you doing there?
I'm all right. How you guys doing, too?
We're doing fantastic. I'm Dave Duenas and my partner Gable Montoya from Max Boxing and Leaving the Ring. Hey, thanks for joining us here on Leaving in the Ring. So you got a big fight coming up. Antonio Tarver, the magic man. So what do you think? Is there going to be a lot of magic from Antonio, or are you gonna show that he's just a trick?
Okay, all the magic is gone. He doesn't have nothing to show no more. So he can't find the magic no more. I'm coming there to show him June 2nd. I'm better than him. I have power and I have sense. I'm smart, and I'm gonna break him down, knock him down.
Now, you know, Antonio Tarver obviously has been commentating and analyzing your fights, and he had some criticism. Is that where it started off? Is that what kind of ticked you off, that he was criticizing you? And is that why this all stemmed up and you guys are going to be meeting in the ring?
Yes, because every time I fight on Showtime, I got the opponent, I'm punching the opponent, beating it, get the opponent in a good spot. This man don't say nothing. Okay, Latif, he don't go, something like that. But he stay right there, looking for a little bit mistake. If your opponent got me maybe one time, he using for excuse to say bad about me. But I don't pay attention for that. I thought, well, he doing his job. But it's not only you working there. There are three people working there. Why? Every time I have a fight, he always do that to me. People told me, what do you do to this guy? You do good for this fight. But the man started to talk bad about you like you do this. Last time you do the same thing. Okay, I said, okay. I told myself I have to pay attention to this guy, what he said to do. So I guess he go back to fight. He stopped boxing before he come back. He went back to fight heavyweight. So it's so terrible. It's not good. So maybe he want to come down to cruiserweight. Maybe... I don't know, because I don't have a bad mind to him. Every time I see him, I say, what's up, champ? I give him respect. You know what? I give you like my brother. But he has a dirty mind outside. So when you do, so how can people like that working on a steady stay for my mistake, talking back, and I saw him in LA at the Nokia. I walked to him. Hey, champ, why are you talking bad about me every time I fight on show ball? You talk about me like I don't even fight. I've lost the fight. I don't do. I punch good. I open it so hard. You telling me, are you slapping? So he said, I'm doing my job. I said, you don't do your job. You do shit. And you shouldn't be doing that.
Right.
So I respect you a lot. But we have an argument that day. They're pushing away. They pull me away. So we separate. All right, I go back home. I look on in video. I don't even look in age. I look in video. I look how he fight. He's the one slapping. He's not punching like I punch. I told him, I said, this man told me I'm slapping. Look how he fight people. I'm going to call him out. I'm going to find, maybe he's going to answer. I call him first time. He hear me, but he acting like he doesn't hear what I say. You understand what I say. So that is another day at the gym. I was training. There's a people came there to do an interview for Amir Khan at the White Tie Gym. They saw me there. There's a Latif guy there. We never hear nothing from you long time. When are you
right.
going to be fired? I said, well, I'm here waiting, training so hard. Anytime they're ready, they will come to me. He said, who do you like to fight next? I said, well, I would like to fight Antonio Tava to show the world who is the better between me and him, because he said bad about me. I want to show the world I'm better than him. That's the only thing I'd say, and I call him out. They call my manager. They say, okay, they will take the fight. Oh, thank good. Oh, we start working for. That's where the fight happened. Okay, now June 2nd. He says he's a magic. He says he still has experience. He's smart. All right. I'm coming here to show him that he doesn't have all those things no more. He is not what he thought. Who he thinking he is not. See the last fight he fight? See how the fight is terrible?
Right.
Even though the fight is Danny Green fight in Australia, if he fight that fight to me, I bet you I will knock this man out first round. Go to the ring, clapping, pull all the stuff. He doesn't have a power, energy, nothing like that to prove like he do before. If he look that video and he look the other video, the old fighting fight, look how good he have. Long time, all bad. Now you want to show yourself like he is the same. No, I will use my advantage as a young kid, strong man, energy, hungry man. I will destroy him. So I'm not shaking. I'm not scared. I'm not rushing. I'm cool. He doesn't go nowhere. He's coming to me on June 2nd. That's all.
Do you think it's we just had Ola Afolabi on, and he's a wild card guy, just like yourself.
Yes.
You guys have trained there like for years and years. Like, I don't really know like your whole background. We haven't done like a full interview. So first off, just take us back to when you first started fighting and how you got to the wild card.
Yeah, you're talking about Afolabi?
No, about you. I'm saying your career. When did you first start fighting, and when did you come to the wild card?
Yeah, I came to wild card 2008, started training, started Mitch Perry, and then started my professional boxing in 2008.
So, I mean, training there, I mean, you know, right now it's the hottest gym in boxing. You get a lot of different fighters going there. How has that changed you over the years as a fighter, fighting all these like top champions and heavyweights and all kinds of people?
Well, I'm going to say I'm a kind of guy, intelligent. I listen, I like to learn. Since when I've been in the white card, since when I've been in the fight, before I get to the show box, every time I fight, I've been improve, getting better. You know, so because I listen to my trainer, I see people fight. You know, listen to the style. I'm working on all the stuff in the gym. It's cool for me. So I see myself as part people, they are champion, world title. As part they're good, back their home, almost knock some of their house. So why me not gonna be world champion? If I'm dealing with all these people like this, so what's gonna make me don't get a title? I'm gonna get that title shot, and I'm gonna get it. Even Antonio Tava, he said to me, he said on Showboard, I'm not ready for championship. But see, I got it too. God will take the championship to challenge him. Now he doesn't know the championship is gonna come. Is gonna bust on your head. We thought it's gonna bust on somebody's head, but God changed it to him. Okay, it's gonna bust on your head on June 2nd. So
you were knocking people out. You were knocking people out for a while there, like. All through 2010, you were just knocking people out. I think every one of your fights was a stoppage. But the last three fights in 2011, you've gone the distance each time. Is that just because the opponents have been getting tougher? And what have you learned in going the distance about yourself that's prepared you for Tarver?
Okay. Earlier, when I knock people out, they always say, I don't have the energy to go long distance. I like to know people out. I feel aggressive. He said that too. He said I don't have energy to go long distance. Now I'm working for long distance to tell them I can go long distance. I can go any round they want to go. Any amount round I can finish it and do good. So and I show them I'm not looking for knockout. If the knockout to come, I'm going to get it. But I'm not gonna jump in there. I'm looking for knockout. It depends the way I set it up. The pressure in, I'm making it open. Yes, I will take the advantage.
You know, Antonio Tarver is a seasoned veteran. He's a guy that can be a little slick and difficult sometimes because he's lanky. Coyote, when you see him, and when you mention the Danny Green fight, which a lot of people kind of wrote him off, didn't think he was going to win that fight, and he did kind of stun the world by beating Green with that fight. What do you think that you have to do to assure a knockout over Antonio Tarver?
Well, it's me with my team. We have a plan, and they believe on me. I mean, listening. I only listen to everything they want me to do. We have a good plan, with a three plan, and I know one or two going to work for this man. I'm not sure. I know he has experience, like they say, but it's not like before. I still give him credit for that. I'm fighting champion. This fight is a happiness for me. I have nothing to lose. Even if he won this fight, It's a plan for me. I'm fighting for world title. So, and he's going to lose the fight to me because the fight belongs to me. So, I think we have a plan to, on June 2nd, what we're going to take for this man. He said he's sneaking, all the sneaking, everything. We know, they know the way I fight too. They watch everything. But he will see, I was showing that things is different. I'm not making mess. I don't curse. I don't look nobody's face. I call somebody. I never do kind of this like in my life. All the opponents I fight, I give them a lot of respect. You looking for something to eat to feed your family. I'm looking the same thing. I'm
right.
Not suspended. So now where I'm from Nigeria, we don't look either face to argue. If Edda says something, a young boy he can't say nothing because you have to respect him. He know better than me. I have to give him credit for that. But if you don't respect yourself, a young kid will go to do crazy. That's what's going to happen on June 2nd. And this fight is coming up. God wants to punish him. Not me. God wants to show him. He's behind me. His hand is on me. So everything he says is sneaking, it's the magic show. You don't know where I'm from. I'm not scared. I will back him up. I will destroy him. I look at him and I say, hey, nigga, I will break you down. I don't
right,
care,
right.
But if I'm mad, I'm not tired. I'm not going to be tired. I'm not going to be scared. I will fight you to death.
Latif, though, do you believe, do you think that he's going to really trade with you, though? I mean, it seems like the last three fights, the guys didn't want to stand and trade with you. They had to box you. And that, to me, showed me that you had a little bit of trouble with guys moving away from you. Have you worked on that? Because my sense is that Antonio Tarver is not going to be dumb enough to trade with you and get into a war. That's why he's lasted a little longer and has been a little bit more preserved by not doing things like that. So that being said, are you prepared to cut the ring off and trap Antonio Tarver?
Down. The first time I fight the guy, I was really, really, if you go back to that fight, they told me, they say I don't cut the ring off. I have something like a muscle pull in my right leg. I'm drawing the leg. If you go back to video of that fight, I'm drawing the leg. So after that fight, before that fight, I've been cutting the ring off. I know how to cut the ring off. Even before the fight, I know how to cut the ring off. After the fight, I fight a lot of two people after that. I cut the ring off. I even knocked them out. I knocked him. The guy is up, I knock him down 2 times, 3 times. If he run, I cut him out, I do good. So the other stuff, he move, he doesn't disturb me. You move, move. You want to run, run. You want to run, hold. So I really prepare for this fight. And I would like to talk to you after the fight again to let you, to tell you that all my promise I say, did I know, did I say I will knock him out? I will knock him out. I'll keep
saying,
I will
not. Woo, I could feel the tension, man. I could feel the that you really want him.
I really want this fight. So, really want this fight. He's the one. He's scared. And people, I don't know. I see one guy on show on YouTube. He has a little beer in his chin. He keeps talking like he know me, like he know everything about me. You don't know me. You just see a couple, 2, 3 fights on showbiz. That is the one you know about me. You don't know who I am. You don't know what I do. You don't know what I'm on sleep. You don't know. Well, you don't know nothing about me. And you go there. But other sneaking, other game plan. You know, you can't tell me like that because telling me to get to my head. No, I will do what I'm going to do. So I'm not going to let all your team or somebody pull. You know, they go to Facebook, something like that, tell something, and I follow that, you know. I listen to my corner, and I'm going to do what they want me to do, and I'll pray to, by the name of the God, I'll win this fight. Easy, easy.
Do you think the difference is that you've been training, like you said, he doesn't know what he's dealing with. Like, he sees what he sees on the networks, and I get this sense from, like, watching all the networks, like, I don't know if Jim Lampley watches Showtime fights. I almost get the sense that he doesn't. And I think the Showtime guys do watch the other fights. But, like, he knows you from the fights he's seen. But I've seen you spar, like, probably more, certainly more times than Antonio Tarver has. You've been with all kinds of people. You think that's going to be the difference, is you've been working with all these top fighters at the wild card all your career, and Antonio kind of comes out of retirement here and there and fights sporadically? It's going to be, just be too young, too strong, just the wrong guy for him.
Number one, I don't even know his age, but I spy a lot of people, they have experience like him. They are the same level. I spy them, I get some experience from them. So I see myself in a good class. I can take this man. I'm not just jumping to this man, try to embarrass him or try to make money for him. Maybe if I fight this man, I will make money. It's not what I'm looking for. Me, I just want, if people want to know, this man is really jealous. He has something. I don't know, but all God knows what is in mind, what is saying bad about me for. He don't know me. I don't do nothing bad about you. So, on June 2nd, I just wanted to show me, knock me down, or show me your sneaking, what they call you, magician, or whatever they call you. Show me. I will show you what I got. What I have, he doesn't have it. So that's what I want to show him. on June 2nd. I'm not shouting. I'm not go the way he's talking. You know, he got paid. People know he get mouth. He can talk. He got paid for showball because they know he have mouth. He can talk. So that is his job. But you have to know people like Ego, he can talk shit to. He can't talk shit to me. So you have to look for people that you can do that kind of stuff to. So now on Showbox, I want on June 2nd on Showtime, I want to show the world, okay, this man, they should be fired him because he don't do a good job. Now they will believe me that he jealous me or something like that. He has something bad in his mind. So I'm working hard. I really train this level I am. Never trained like this in my life. I'm really strong, ready. Boss, you want to boss? We boss. We want to fight? We fight. Anyhow, you come. So all you sneaking you want to do, I'm ready for June 2nd.
Well, there you go. Latif Coyote here on Leaving the Ring, talking about his upcoming fight with Antonio Tarver, the Magic Man. Hey, Latif, thanks again for calling in, brother. It was a pleasure. Wish you all the best of luck. And after your victory, if you get that victory, we'd love to have you back on to talk about it.
We going to have you, and we going to talk to you to make sure I make my promise. I've been praying for you every day. I say, God, Antonio Tarver, whatever he is, please protect him. Don't let him have an injury. I've been praying for him, pray for everybody, to make everybody to know that, yes, I'm better than him. And I'm going to show you on that June 2nd. I don't pray, I don't curse, I don't do nothing. I believe in God, and God is going to take him from me. He doesn't sneak, he doesn't have nothing to do. So all those math is saying about me, that you keep saying, June 2nd, he will show me what he got. I will show you what I got. I'm going to destroy him.
Let me ask you just one more question before you go, okay?
Okay.
I know that Freddie Roach is in your corner, but seeing that he's busy with Manny Pacquiao and other fighters, I've seen a lot of pictures with you and the Benavides family. What's going on there? Is the father senior in your corner? Is he helping you out, or is it Freddie Roach? Who's actually helping you get prepared for Antonio Tarver?
Before Freddie go to Filipino, even preparing me. He's preparing me before he go to Filipino. He just go to Filipino for 3 weeks. And he come back. He rest for 1 week now. He start back. When he go, Ozen start to help me. And Jesse, they start to help me before he came. He give them all the program. He put it down before he leave. So he put everything down. So they follow the program. The program is going. He arrange everything before he go. So now when they come, Freddy take over. Freddy be working with me now. So that's
okay.
It.
All right then. Well, there you go, Latif. Thank you again, brother, for calling in, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, sir.
There you go, Latif Coyote calling in, and having a chance to speak his mind about Antonio Tarver. I mean, you could just hear the genuine dislike that he has for. Yeah, I mean, he's really pissed off about Antonio calling out his fights, you know. And
I'm never gonna sit at sparring and like criticize anything that he does in the ring.
I was gonna say the same thing.
He's fight over and just eat me like a snack. You know, he's not a small man.
He's not a small man, and his punch is definitely not small at all. I'm a little nervous against picking against Coyote here.
I'm not picking against him. It's based on that. I was at the press conference though, and it was the same thing. Like he's an intense. I don't know if you met him in person, but
I've
met him. He's a trip in person. He's just very intense. You know, he's. Nigerian, of the Nigerian descent. He's lived here for years and years. And he's just like kind of tall dude. He's got these eyes, like this very intense stare. It's a great smile. Like when he smiles, like he's just a very, he lights up. You know, he's a cool guy. But in the ring, man, I saw him give Javier the Monster Torres a low blow. It was on accident, but Latif just let swing with a left hook, and it just, square up, caught him with all of it. One of the most brutal punches I've ever seen landed up close. The the guy hits hard. He's a physical specimen. He's very raw. But Tarver's going to have his hands full because this guy's going to keep coming. You know, oh, my goodness. I think it's going to be an eight-round window. And if Tarver can survive that end of one or two rounds, he may have a shot. But it's going to be interesting. It's an interesting fight style-wise, you know.
You know, this is the interesting thing. This is the interesting to me. This is the interesting part about this fight here for myself is that Latif is in the Antonio Tarver position back when Antonio was facing Roy Jones. You know, a hungry guy, wanted to make his name, wanted to fight whoever was available out there. And Tarver is not really in the Roy Jones position, but, well, no, he is kind of because Roy was almost on the way out. You kind of saw that he was getting old. He was kind of, you know, deteriorating. And that's where Antonio, in a bit, that's where his career is kind of at. It's really not – you're not really sure if he can hang with this young gun, with this guy that just wants it a little bit more. Even though Antonio did go out and he did beat Green, who a lot of us didn't think he was going to be able to pull off, I still don't get the sense that he's going to be able to do this with Latif.
Well, and Green, though, he had that pancreas, like, you know, surgery or, you know, some sort of, like, his liver removed or something.
Right.
He didn't have his liver removed, but he had some sort of like cyst, like, you know, in his body, they had to remove like his gallbladder or something, something disgusting. Let me just keep naming parts of the anatomy until I hit it. anyways, he was missing a body part, an organ. And, you know, he came back off of that surgery and you know, I'm not blaming it completely on that because I bet Tarver fought a good fight and he looked fresh and good doing it.
Exactly.
But it's not Latif Coyote all angry. I mean, at the press conference, I thought he was going to be, like, understated, you know, and instead he just comes up and starts going off all crazy. And you know, it was great theater, you know. But, like, Tarver took it and was like, well, we'll see, you know, if, you know, that energy could tire him all out, you know.
Have we seen Antonio Tarver up against this kind of an energy? I mean, normally it's Antonio that's come. Oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah, Glenn Johnson, you're right.
Glenn Johnson gave him hell. I mean, I don't think Coyote's that kind of defensive, you know, because Glenn's actually got good defense and sneaky, you know.
Right.
But that kind of shield, he puts his forearms in front of him and slides forward behind the shield and kind of brings out the sword jab every once in a while on the right hand, you know, and then he gets right back behind it. He's like a Spartan. He's not going to hit you with power, but he's just going to keep jabbing at you. With Latif, he wings shots. He doesn't really use that jab. And he's almost like Sam Peter, another Nigerian fighter. They just got the same kind of musculature.
Right.
Very square bodies, barrel chested, and they don't really do like the swordsman side stance. You know, they're a little more squared up, and so their shots are squared up, and his body's not set up to be like a guy that jabs and brings something from the rear. You know, he's just kind of raw power. It's an interesting style matchup. It's gonna be the bull and the matador.
That's
I would be ringside for that one.
Yeah. You know what? I'm probably gonna have to make it out to that one too, as well. I mean, because it, to me, it's very interesting. Like I did mention it, Latif, was that is he prepared to cut off the ring? Because I can't picture the older guy commentator Antonio Tarver that's gonna be willing to trade shots with a young, strong kid like Coyote. I see him really trying to drag him into the deep waters, try to make him, you know, spend a little bit more energy than he needs to. And I think Antonio is really feeding off the anger and the despising that Latif has because it's, in my opinion, if I'm the older guy facing the younger gun, I do want to get him a little bit riled up. I do want to get him out of his game plan. I do want him not to focus on a game plan and just go in there and try to outdo himself the way Muhammad Ali did to big George Foreman, you know. And if that's what Antonio's plan is to do, Latif has to be a little bit smarter and understand that, you know what, I'm going to have to make sure that I leave the emotions outside the ring and just stick to my game plan and try to land those big shots and hit to the hip to slow down the older guy, you know, because I don't personally think Antonio Tarver will be able to hold up to some shots to the body. You know, he's going to have to stand and trade in the mid rounds if he's successful in catching Antonio Tarver to that body.
It could be like that, like the Segura and Ivan Calderon kind of thing where,
you know, because like Segura is kind of one-dimensional. He's getting a little bit better.
Right.
A little better. But he just went at Calderon, who's like a master boxer and mover, a guy that has no shame in just moving around the ring. And he just like kept bullying him, throwing punches to the body, and it was relentless. And he trusted that, you know, I'm not going to get hit to the head with anything, you know, that can knock me out. Although Tarver's got real power. I don't know how much he does as a cruiserweight. He's a big man. Like, seeing them together, Tarver's a big man. He can take the weight, you know. It'd be interesting, you know, it's just going to be an interesting fight. I kind of can't wait to see it. I know it's like, but styles make fights, and there's a story here, and there's genuine animosity. And whenever you have all those three things together, it's going to be a good fight. And
I know.
I love the story that he talks shit to him while he's announcing his fights, and then he's like, all right, man, you think I'm not shitty? Get in the ring. And so he did.
Yeah. You know what I mean? He basically told him, put your money where your mouth is, you know? And he's bringing it. He's going to bring it. You know, you got to respect Antonio a little bit here. You know, he still believes there's still a little bit left of the magic in him. But I think, like, if anything, if Coyote can land that big punch, I think we're going to see the pixie dust fly off the top of Magic's head, man.
Or he could pull a Paulie Malignaggi and just surprise us all and just like, oh, yeah, you thought I was done, and then just knock dude out, you know? It could happen.
I mean,
let's never forget, and I can never take away from Antonio Tarver, he is the dude that pulled the Babe Ruth of boxing. He looked at Roy Jones and said, you got any excuses tonight, Roy? You know, and he pulled his shot. Oh, my God. And then, like, second round, he just knocked him out with one shot. You just can never know with the Magic Man. You know, you got to give it to him.
You definitely can't, you know.
If he wins this fight, I'll tell you what fight. I wonder if we'd see it. I don't know if he would do it, but it would be the only fight I'd want to see Antonio Tarver in. I wouldn't want to see him in with a Klitschko. Is against Bernard Hopkins at like at cruiserweight. A rematch.
Really?
What do you
think? Oh, man.
I'm sorry. That's the only fight I want to see Tarver in. Because I think he got... Hear me out on this.
Notice the silence in the world.
He got
Twitter and Facebook.
That.
Go ahead.
Yeah, the people like, wow. I just like the needle just got pulled off the record. really? Because I thought Tarver, you know, he was riding that high of taking out Jones. He moved up to heavyweight. For the movie, for the Stallone movie for Rocky Balboa, which he was really good in. And then he, like, crashed, dieted, came down. He got cherry-picked, in my opinion, by Hopkins. He didn't, you know, a guy who loses his belt with that kind of prestige deserves a rematch. They didn't do it. I wouldn't mind seeing him get a shot at beating Hopkins again. He's got the kind of tools to kind of trouble him. He just didn't look like himself in that fight. I don't know. That's just me. I always like guys to get redemption. I always wanted Tito to get his redemption again. Hopkins, I wanted Oscar to fight Tito to set the record straight, but that never happened. Oscar
yeah.
says, you know, that was why. He didn't tell me why. I didn't ask. But it's baby steps, you know.
We're waiting for Jose Benavides Jr. to call in so we could talk a little bit about his upcoming fight. And he was away from, you know, from the ring because of injury. But you know what? There's a good, interesting fight that's happening this Friday. We got Kareem Mayfield going in with a kid named Serrano, who's also trained by James Coward. And if you followed even the ring, you know that we put up his video, James Coward. He's a coach and trainer, that upcoming coach and trainer. It hasn't got his Justy due yet. But this is going to be the big thing for him. This is going to be his coming out party. If Serrano's able to pull it off against Kareem Mayfield. Kareem Mayfield's got that Sugar Shane of old Mosley style. He's from the Bay Area. I know Kareem is a good kid, you know, but he hasn't seemed to shake that one-punch syndrome that he has. You know, he throws one punch every 40 seconds, and for a young gun. I know some folks are going to be like, oh, wait, he stopped Stevie Forbes. But look how long it took him to stop him. Look how long it took him to kind of just, you know, oil up the gears and get it running down the street, you know. Kareem, to me, is almost like that pedal you got to push in order to get a kick start. And for a guy that's that young, he shouldn't need that extra push, Gabe. I don't know what you think about that. But I think that Serrano, if he goes in – go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. I think in any business, I'm just laughing at Steve Kim's latest article. I didn't see this today, and I'm pulling up the Max Boxing schedule, and it's called Gays by Speakers Too. Check it out on Max Boxing. I think no one can ever want anything that you're trying to get more than you, and I think maybe that's been the case. I hear now he's up there working at Virgil's gym and doing really well. I think we're working at Undisputed. And apparently putting in the work, but I don't know. You know, I've never really been that big on him. You know, I've seen him work at the Wild Card and stuff, and I've seen him fight. But you know, fighters, it's a spiritual journey. It's a mental, physical journey, figuring out who you are. I mean, look at Gente Escobedo right now. You know, he just turned 30. He's getting these wins. He just looks like an overall complete guy who's got his legs under him. He knows exactly what he's supposed to do to win, and he does it. It takes time. So, you know, Whitfield, these guys just don't fight often enough. I think they like to, you know, not him in general or him specifically, but in general, these guys, they're more excited about being a fighter, but not really like fighting all the time. I think the
right.
only way you can really get better is to fight all the time. Look at how good the old fighters were. They fought all the time. Their defense was better. You got to fight more often. You got to not get punched as much, right? You know, but you still got to win, so you got to throw punches. You got to learn how to get inside and hit and not be hit and have sharp defense. Guys like Hopkins, you know, but only throwing more punches and being more exciting. If guys fought more often, then that would happen. I mean, Royal Diaz is going to be fighting again soon. You know, these guys just don't stop. He's already fought, what, 3 times this year?
Yeah. And he, you know what? Joel Diaz is actually fighting on the undercard is going to be Rodney Hernandez out of Modesto, California, a heavyweight that I've been keeping an eye on. He's going to be down there, too. I think I'm going to take a trip and we'll see that.
It has changed his opponent, too, for Joel Diaz Jr. He's fighting Leon Bobo, 18-9-1. I was told that today by Mario Iadobi, Boxing 360. So, That kid, I'm really excited about. He fights often.
Oh yeah,
getting sharper, you know, all the time. Dude, yeah, he might be fighting right now.
Some kids play on the Xbox. Joel actually fights in the. He plays in the ring, you know.
Yeah, he just goes and fights.
You know,
yeah, so, I mean, I think that's the number one thing that really is keeping everybody behind. You know, a lot of these fighters, these young fighters. You know, I want to see them. You know, that's the thing I do like about Adrian Broner, too, is that he wants to fight often. You know, not putting him in with, like, the toughest guys on the planet. That's what bothers me about Adrian Broner. But he's fighting often, and sometimes you're going to have to – we'll probably see a test in, like, 2 fights, you know. Meanwhile, the guy's making, like, major HBO money.
I know.
Anyways, that's a whole other show.
But he is getting in with a good matchup, which is the Gary Sykes has been throwing out. He's going to be getting Escobedo. But you know what?
Yeah.
Let's patch in our next guest. I believe we have him on with us. Jose Benavides Jr., a highly taunted prospect, somebody I'm very high on, somebody I'm always excited to see. From the get-go, when I seen this kid, I was like, this kid's special. Jose, you there?
Hey, what's up, man? How's it going?
Doing good, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I've been training hard, getting ready for next Saturday. I mean, we've had a great camp, and I'm ready to give the fans a good show.
You know, when we had you on, you were this is right when you had barely signed with Top Rank. We put you on, and you didn't even have a pro fight. No, you did. I think you had like 2 or 3 under your belt.
Yeah, I think it was about around 2 or 3, something like that.
Yeah, you know, so it's always good, man, to see that you're still going at it and you're still out there trying to make things happen for your dream. I see that your little brother David Benavides is doing well, man. What a big kid! First off, man, your little brother. How funny is that to go? This is my little brother, and the guy is just, you know, he's a light heavyweight.
Yeah, no, my little big brother. Yeah, he's around probably like maybe 6'2", almost 6'3", 180 pounds. So I guess you could say he's my little big brother.
That's true, man. That's true, you know. And let's talk a little bit about the injury. You know, you haven't been in the ring. You were out for a while. What happened?
Actually, my last fight, when I fought on the undercard of Marquez versus Pacquiao, in the first round, I messed up my hand. I kind of hit him on top of the head, and I thought I had broke my wrist. And it turns out I ripped some I tore some ligaments, and I had an extra bone that wasn't supposed to be there. I guess it was I was born with an extra bone, so they took the bone out and then actually fixed my tendon. So I mean, I've been out of the I was out for I want to say 3 months.
You were born with an extra bone?
I guess it grew over time. That's what the doctor told me. They removed it and they took a picture and they actually showed me. It was a big piece. So are you
kind of telling me you're like one of the X-Men, like a Wolverine or something like that?
I wish.
One of my brothers actually was born with an extra bone in his hand. It's the same thing. It's kind of a trip.
They say quite a few people are actually born with those. It was a good thing that they took it out when they did, because they said over time it was just going to get worse and make my hand worse. So, I mean,
right.
Like I said, everything, they took it out and everything so far has been good. I've been using it a little bit. At first it hurt me, but now I'm kind of getting used to it again. It's not really hurting anymore. And I'm just, like I said, ready for Saturday night, Saturday.
Did you have your tail removed or did you keep that?
Actually, what'd you say? It's kind of cutting off. My tail?
Yeah, I'm messing with you, dude.
I don't think I was born with a tail.
He was born with an extra bone, bro.
Yeah. So how does it feel? I mean, how long did it take before you were able to go back and just start to get into full training and sparring? How long were you off?
Well, actually, I was out, I want to say, since November. I was out from November all the way to February. So I was out for a couple months, when they took my cast off, the doctor said it was okay for me to start working out and running. So I started running a little bit. And this camp, we've been training hard for like a month and a half now, been sparring with nothing but my left hand. I mean, I figure if I'm going to use my right hand, I'd rather just use it during the fight. And if I mess it up during the fight, I'll mess it up during the fight, but not in sparring. I've been getting a lot of good work in with my left hand in sparring, so.
Are you at Wild Card, or are you strictly in Arizona right now?
We moved to California about almost a year ago now, so we're at the Wild Card.
Okay, so you're back in there. Who you been working for? In preparation.
I'm sorry, it's cutting off. What'd you say?
What sparring partners have you been using, or who have you been getting in with?
You know, to be honest with you, I've been using quite a few. I'm bad with names. I know I was sparring this Russian guy that's, I think, ranked 7 in the world at 147. I think he has a record of, I checked it the other day, like 23-0 with like 12 knockouts or something like that. Really, really good guy. And I've got a couple guys at the gym that gave me really good work. And I also worked with, I'm bad with names, but like I said, I've gotten a lot of good work for this fight.
You're not alone, brother. Don't feel that bad. I'm bad with names as well.
Yeah.
That's fine.
So, getting back in the ring, I mean, you were out for a while. You had that operation, get the bone out. Getting back in the groove of things, though, I mean, because obviously you had to sit back and watch everybody else put in the work. How hard was it for yourself to just sit there and not really be able to do anything because you had to recoup? I mean, is it almost kind of like starting all over again? I mean, are the nerves there all, like, you know, because to me, when you start getting in the groove of something, the jitters and the butterflies in the stomach, they kind of go away and you end up becoming comfortable. But then when you leave it for a while and you come back to work, it's almost like you missed everything out, and it's almost like you have to, you know, be caught up to speed and what's going on.
Yeah, you know, it kind of sucked that I would go to these fights and I wasn't able to fight or train. I would watch my brother train. I wasn't able to train. But I actually came back, and like you said, at first when you come back, it's kind of just a little awkward because you haven't done it for a while. But it took me about a week or so to get my groove back, and I got it back, and I'm, like I said, I've been training hard since for like about a month and a half now. So we've been getting good work, and we've been running 6-7 miles, waking up at 4 in the morning. So, I mean, we're ready.
Landing the first big punch, you know, in sparring or during workout, did you hold back, or did you want to find out right away if you were in full form?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't really use my right hand much. I use it sometimes. I like throwing my jabs and my body shots, so that's what I was really throwing more, just more of a jab, trying to measure the guy and just trying to rip those body shots. I mean, I love body shots.
and it's hard to come up from a body shot when you get hit with one of those. So, I mean, also just practicing more on my left hand. My hand more just more of a to measure, like more of a measuring tool. So,
you've always been that way. I mean, since the first time I saw you, I think I saw your first session with Amir Khan back in the day. That was, yeah, I think it was at your first week. And the thing that always struck me about you is that you had presence. He tried to muscle you because you couldn't get past your jab. And you swung him to the – he tried to swing you into the ropes. I remember you basically spinned out of it and put him on the ropes and knocked him with a 1-2. What do you think has changed from there to now in terms of your development as a fighter, how Top Rank's moved you? How are you different? And how are you?
Well, I feel actually that was almost 3 years ago, I think it was. Yeah, I feel like I said, I'm still young, I'm growing, and my body actually feels stronger now. And at that time, I think I was around like 104. I think I was hitting 140. Now I'm actually 146, 147 right now. So my body got a little bigger. I feel a little stronger now. I think my jab might have got a little better. I mean, you're never going to have the perfect jab, but you can keep trying to perfect it and trying to make it better. So I've been working on my jab a lot. The jab is it's the key to everything. Without the jab, I don't really see anything. I mean, you can't throw the jab. You can't throw the right hand without setting it up with the jab. That's just how I see it. So, I mean, just been working a lot on jab. And like I said, the body shots, I love those body shots. So I'm trying to get those better.
You've always been a body shot guy, and that's a very sign of a professional. Why is that? Is that just fighters that you emulated coming up, like Chavez, or where does that come from?
I just like those body shots. A lot of guys can take a lot of punches to the head, but those body shots, you don't even have to hit them hard. You just have to hit them in the right spot at the right time, and they won't get up. Those punches are lethal. So, I mean, I've been hit with a lot of body shots, and they're hard. Not to make a face or not to want to go down. They're hard. They hurt.
I'm laughing because I had my first sparring session with a heavyweight yesterday, and it was body punching day. I'd never been hit by a heavyweight to the body, and it was three rounds of just like, oh my god, your air just shooting out of your body, you know?
They just knock your air out, and it hurts.
Yeah.
Jose, let me ask you this because you know, just like right now, your brother's going through. He's fighting some pretty big names. He's sparring them. He's getting his workout, and that kind of you went through that in the beginning of your career. You know, when you got signed on the Top Rank, you got in with Amir Khan. You were getting in with Manny Pacquiao. But now that you've kind of done and passed that, right now, to you, is that where you get your best work? In sparring, or is it the guys that don't have a name yet and they're trying to make a name for themselves in the gym?
You know, I mean, everyone has their different style. Every boxer, some guy might have a horrible style, but it's just that style you can't adjust to. But I mean, all the guys that go to the wild card, I mean, they're trying to impress everyone, and they're bringing their A game. So I mean, you can't let your guard down because all these guys are going to kill you. They want that spot, and they want Freddy to see them and train them. So, I mean, you have to keep your A-game at all times. And whenever you go there, man, there's great sparring. I mean, there's nothing but the best sparring out there. So, I mean, it doesn't matter if the guy has a name or not. I mean, they're all ready, and they all want to get noticed. So,
what do you prefer? Do you prefer to fight to spar somebody that, you know he's an up-and-comer or he's been around for a minute – but doesn't have that glamour name? Or do you prefer to get in with the guys that have the big names, you know, the guys that writers like to call pound for pound, you know?
You know, I'd rather spar with the guys with the big names because I spar with guys with big names and people will notice me more, so it's kind of giving me a little bit more publicity. And if I do good against them, that makes me feel like I'm kind of a little bit catching on to their level and hopefully one day be like them, you know, be world champion and be a big name in boxing, so...
Absolutely, man. Well, Jose, man, I'm really...
I'm curious. Like, well, I have a few more, Dave.
Go ahead.
Sorry. You know, you're kind of like, you know, there's the whole Top Rank, Golden Boy, Cold War, you know? I would say, like, your equivalent on the Golden Boy side is probably Jesse Vargas. I mean, he was a Mayweather Promotions guy, but he's on Golden Boy cards. Would you agree with that? Or do you think you're just kind of... worrying about Jose Benavidez Jr. becoming a better fighter at this point, and you'll figure out where you are in terms of the landing.
Yeah, right now, I mean, I'm still young. I just turned 20, so, I mean, I have a long way to go. Jesse Vargas is a higher level than me. He's getting big fights. Like, he's been around longer. So, I mean, I'm still young. I just want to keep learning and hopefully one day, you know, be fighting big cards, be on TV like Jesse Vargas and Canelo Alvarez and all those up-and-coming superstars. So, I mean, right now I just want to take things slow and hopefully one day I'll get the chance to be a world champion and just going to keep training hard for that day.
That's smart. I mean, you're only 20. I mean, you're not even at 20 fights yet. You're 14 fights, 12 knockouts. Well, they probably haven't. I mean, it's Bruce Trampler and Brad Goodman are the matchmakers for top rank. I mean, those two guys are... I think if you were a gambler and you could find out who they were picking in a fight every weekend, you'd be a millionaire. Is it nice to be in those kind of hands? And do you guys...
Yeah, no,
is that how you
to
deal
me,
with them, or do you deal with the manager?
To me, they're the best. They're the best in the game, and I'm happy with top rank. I'm happy with the decision I made, and they've treated me really well. And I've been training hard, so I mean I'm happy with what they're doing right now. And I'm just like I said, I'm just gonna keep training hard, and hopefully, like I said, one day I'll be a world champion. I mean I'm not gonna stop training for them. So, but I'm happy with the job they're doing. I'm happy with top rank. I'm happy with my team, my management, everyone that's part of my team. I'm just happy with everyone. I think they're doing a fantastic job. And to keep working hard at it.
Hey, you get access. I always want to talk to Trampler, and I don't really know him that well. We kind of, you know, talk a little bit. But, I mean, do you get a chance to, when they pick a guy for you, say, do you get to kind of discuss why and break it down with them? Or is it, how does that all work for you?
To be honest with you, a lot of times I don't really know who I'm fighting until probably like 3 days before the fight, because they choose a fighter and sometimes they don't want to fight, so they change the fighter, and then the fighter asks for more money. So, I mean, it's kind of like I just have to be basically ready, a gamble. I just have to be ready. I mean, so I don't really know who I'm fighting until I see them right there at either the hotel I'm staying at or the weigh-ins, or because I've had a couple fighters that I thought I was going to fight. I've watched a video on them, and then they change it to a different fighter, and then they change it to a different fighter because they want more money. So, I mean, it's just kind of like a gamble. You just have to be ready.
Huh. I mean, is that harder or the same as the amateurs to you?
I mean, the pros way harder than the amateurs. You have to train twice as hard. But it's kind of a little similar in a way, because in the amateurs, when you go up to big tournaments, you haven't seen the guy that you're going to fight. So it's kind of like a gamble as well. You don't really know what the guy's going to bring to the table. I mean, there's a lot of great amateurs out there. So when you go and you fight in these big tournaments, you don't know who you're gonna go up against. You don't know, it's different brackets. You don't know who's gonna win, who's gonna fight you next. I mean, it's kind of like a gamble. You just have to be ready.
What do you know about this guy, Josh Sosa, that you're scheduled to fight? He's 10-2, no draws, 5 knockouts. Have you seen him? Can you give us a breakdown?
To be honest with you, I don't know nothing about him. Besides his record, that's about it.
Well, I mean, screw it. There's only one way to find out, and that's the bell rings, and then he comes across and starts doing shit at you.
Yeah, you know, that's
right.
What I like to do. When I fight the first rounds, I like to see, I take it as a kind of like a learning round to see what the guy has, if he's going to be a counter puncher, if he's going to be a pressure fighter. Is he going to use a jab a lot? Just to see what the guy has. The first round, more like a test the guy. I'll see what he has. And then from there, we'll try to adjust to a style and see what our game plan will be.
Hmm. The guy you were sparring with, is, according to Ryan Bivens, is at Sweetboxing on Twitter. Anton Novikov, 24-0 Russian fighter, rated number 8 by the WBC. That's pretty good sparring.
Yeah, it's really good sparring.
Yeah, no, those Russian guys are tough. They come to kill you, so I mean, they're good work.
They're in shape too, man. You know,
yeah,
no, like
yeah.
Little...
I mean, they don't stop punching until the bell rings. So,
well, Jose, I wish you all the luck in your next fight, man. Thanks for stopping by, and good luck to you.
No, thank you. I appreciate it, man. Whenever you guys want me on your show, man, I'll be more than glad to get on your guys' show, and I just want to thank you guys for giving me the opportunity to be on your show again. I appreciate it.
Hey,
no problem, brother. It's always fun having you on, Jose. You take care.
Thank you, man. You too.
Alright.
The young prospect from Top Rank, Jose Benavides Jr., on Leaving the Ring, talking about his upcoming fight, also about the bone in his hand. He needed an operation in his right hand. that needed to be taken out. Let's take some fight fans here that want to talk boxing. You know, got some folks that want to talk Bradley Pacquiao. Some folks want to talk about the ESPN fight that's going to happen, that is coming up between Tito Serrano and Kareem Mayfield. So let's start taking it down the road. People have been holding. Some folks have been on hold for almost, 60 minutes here. So let's go with the first guy that's been on hold. Frank wants to talk anything about boxing. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? Hello,
please,
Frank.
Please, Frank. Is it Frank?
No, you guys finally pick up the phone?
Frank.
What's
45
up, Frank?
Minutes later. You guys sound like goddamn Jim Lampley and Larry Merchant over there talking their ass off. Boom! Bang! Bang! That's not for sure.
How
that's
you
what's coming next. Well, I'm going to bring it back to the Tarver debate because I've been talking to myself this whole time. So.
Go
I
ahead.
Gotta say, Tarver's a young fighter, man. He hasn't had that many crazy fights.
Right.
You know what I mean? The wear and tear on Tarver is slim to none. I mean, he's gotten a bullshit knockdown by Hopkins. I think he's going to come out. Even though I love the way old boy was talking today, you know what I mean? He was totally about it. He's like, I don't talk shit about him. He doesn't talk shit about me. And if this guy's got a mouthful of words for me, I'm just ready to show to the ring. Sounds like most Nigerians. I like that about them. You know what I mean? The arrogance and all that is out the window with them.
Yeah.
But somebody that is an arrogant asshole out there is this kid named Lamont Peterson and his goddamn trainer Barry Hunter.
Wow.
And I'm ready to knock some shoes off and take him off the little totem pole, because if I had two positive tests, if you went to go apply at Chevron and they gave you a drug test and you fail for two hits of pot or whatever it is, you failed the test. You don't get to go to in front of a judge and all this and that. So, to me,
Here's a piece of information that probably has not been printed anywhere. Speaking to this, and we talked about this on another show that we were on together, on Alec Kohut's Max Boxing Radio. It was like last night, Wednesday night. I guess I could say this. You know, I won't cite my source, but sources tell me that everybody knew about that first test, and it's the only test that everybody knew about. In a random testing scheme, it was the only one that people didn't know about. Now, I'm not saying that's an out, but I think it's something that they're looking at. But I think Peterson's people are also maybe looking at, at least from the U. I don't know if you saw the UK video interview that he did today with Mr. Conway, but it seemed to me that he's starting to get a sense about the doctor. But the doctor probably misdiagnosed him and gave him the wrong medicine. I'm not ready to throw them under the bus. I know you are, Frank, but we had to. Do you give Margarito the benefit of the doubt? Do you give Margarito the benefit of the doubt?
You know what? No, I don't. Even though I'm the biggest fight fan of his out there. You know what? He cheated. Shane Mosley cheated. These guys don't exist. They give guys like all the old school dudes really bad names, and those dudes fought for mafia bosses. They weren't getting caught for this type of shit. This dude shoveling pellets up his ass to fight better? Come on, man. What kind of shit is that? That's not cool, man. You know what I mean? And then the thing is about it is you're going to take glory like that. You're going to take as much glory. They were on every radio show, Barry Hunter and Lamont Peterson, talking about how big he got, how strength, how much different is this and that was. It's flat out. Just how about admit it, and then I'd respect you much more for it. You know what I mean? It's like a cheating husband out there. When I told my chick, I was like, yo, you just don't do it, and I got to cheat on you. She respected me for it. We went our different ways, and everybody was happy. You know what I mean? Same thing with us fans. Just man up to your shit. Every excuse that they've had has contradicted each and every excuse. It's a liar telling a lie. You can't cover up a lie. That's just what happens. You know what I mean? And I want to know what's going down in the Pacquiao camp, because something's happening out there, and nobody's talking about it. And I heard some exclusive news about something about Pacquiao, that possibly this fight might not even happen.
What? I didn't hear this.
I haven't heard about that.
Yeah,
no,
man.
I haven't heard
I don't know.
Fight.
I've been
the
looking all over the place.
Happen. Yeah, I haven't heard any of that. I mean, there was like a rumor that Floyd had tested positive, that some guy was trying to put out on Twitter. That didn't catch fire. I mean, it turned out to not be true. Rumors and all that. I feel like I've got...
Maybe that rumor is to kind of deflect of what happened with the whole gay marriage you know, comment and stuff. But
just
yeah,
a bunch of silliness. Well, but I always think, you know, Frank, that I guess my new phrase to myself is there's what you know and what you can print. I mean, that's an old axiom. And I would say that about the Peterson case, and I would say that about the Margarito case. There's a lot of things, like what I just dropped now, that there's little details that are there that you have to kind of verify. I think we need to let him have his hearing and people see what went down. I mean, I think, like earlier in the show, I mentioned how those pills have generally, at least one brand I know of, those pellets are packaged in something that gives a warning about for athletes and positive tests. Now, Lamont absolutely was responsible for this situation because he didn't take control of his body thoroughly. He didn't get fully educated. Let a doctor that may or may not be a quack take a crack at his body, and now look at him. You know, so it is kind of that, you know, Sanford and Son, Lamont, you big dummy kind of situation.
Exactly.
But at the same time, you know, you got to look at the doctor, and then you got to look at the larger issue, which is these doctors that are kind of coming in, or quote unquote strength and conditioning coaches with pills. And we've heard Shane Mosley on this show talk about it. Jacante's talked about it. Talked with many people about it, or seen it in the gyms. It's an epidemic right now, and I think, you know, Lamont is. We shouldn't look at him as like the exception. We should look at him as the rule we just don't know about. You know.
Yeah, I just want to. It's pretty intense out there with all these crazy things that are happening off in boxing. You know, I'm happy that the Tarver fight's in L.A. And, you know, I want some boxing back in L.A. I want to see it happen. You know, we got two pretty good fights with the Victor Ortiz and Berto fight going on coming up here. And I'm excited for the fights all to be popping up back in L.A.
It used to be a fight town, man, you know, back in the day. I mean, so many fighting used to be, you know, an L.A. or a Hollywood sport, man. So how many fights can you go back and you saw Jack Nicholson sitting ringside? And that's when you know you're cool, is when Jack shows up to watch your shit, you know. He doesn't have to have sunglasses on and he's watching
sure.
you. Boxing isn't Jack Nicholson cool anymore, you know. And maybe bringing it back to L.A. and getting stuff at the Staples Center, that's looking to be a good card, you know.
How about Michael J. Fox cool? There's no such thing as Michael J. Fox cool or what?
Is that Freddie Roach or Michael J. Fox?
Yeah. Wow.
Ouch.
Oh, yeah, Michael J. Fox was sitting next to Sugar Ray Leonard when Sugar at the, what, Hagler Mogabi?
Yeah.
And when Leonard said to Michael J. Fox, of all people, I see something, you know.
I think Stallone, Vito, all those guys, when they show up to the fights, that's some hot stuff. You know what I mean, Chuck? Always seeing Chuck back there with Gotti, coming out with Gotti. That's always a big reminder to me. But, man, I just wanted to say, too, this boxing show is amazing. You guys do a really, really good job. You guys are covering a lot of stuff. Just keep putting me on hold for 48 minutes, goddamn. Seriously, I got a cell phone bill with a data plan that ain't nice. Come on, man. Seriously. Hey, you need to hook me up with your people on the cell phone plan or something, man.
Once again, like, you know, we'll have to get some sort of text thing or, you know, a Facebook, you know, chat, like, hey, I'm ready to call in.
Plug in
David Cannon.
All right,
in,
I'll
like
definitely
a VIP
send that
kind of
signal
line.
For sure in the air.
There you go. Or Frank could just bribe me by sending me some cigars or something, you know?
Man, anytime, brother. Come on down, man. Much obliged.
Hey. All right, brother.
Do that. You guys have a good one, man.
You too, brother. Thanks.
Cheers.
That's great, man. Fight fans, you want to call in? You certainly can. 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. 3 hours of boxing talk. It's kind of slow, you know, happening. It's going to be a slow weekend here for us boxing heads. Except for, you know, unless you're going to be pumped up for the Mikael Kester versus Alan Green. Then there's something else, you know. But being that we're diehard fans, we're probably going to tune into it. I know I'm going to tune in to watch it. I don't know about yourself, Gabriel, but, you know, even though I think I know the outcome of what's going to happen with Alan Green, you know, he's going to be all talk until he leads into that ring and he kind of melts down and falls apart, and Kessler will probably take over and do what Mikael does. I'm still going to tune in and watch it. Shame on me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is a little bit of a rough couple weeks, you know. I don't know. You know, I'm sorry, I'm in the middle of a text. You kind of caught me off guard. You know, it's funny to me, the Lamont Peterson thing,
we're on the subject of that. And that stuff, you know, it's just for everybody else, it seems like the story's kind of stopped. And for me, it's like the story is just ongoing, almost barely beginning. I mean, tomorrow is a really big day. You know, Dick Pound from he's the WADA founding chairman, no longer active, but somebody that everyone listens to, certainly still active in being an activist. He's meeting with the WADA board of directors, and they're going to be discussing the Lamont Peterson case and carbon isotope ratio testing as a screening test tool, and using that in the London Games this year, the 2012 Summer Games. It's going to be significant. I mean, if they start target testing people for, you know, with carbon isotope ratio testing, who knows? I'm just curious if we're going to have a Summer Games, you know, with at least the numbers I think that would come up. It's going to be very interesting the next few months. I don't think people realize like the scope of what this is, and they're confusing the issue. It's almost like I've always said this about like Mayweather and Pacquiao and drug testing. They're two different issues. Like, you know, anytime I tried to talk about PEDs early on when I was writing articles, every time I would put one out, it would inevitably on forums go into a Manny Pacquiao versus Floyd Mayweather argument. It's a separate issue. Instead of looking at it, you know, for the sport, you know, you have to really separate it from those guys.
I stay away from all that, you know what I mean?
Bipartisanship,
You know, I'm going to call in somebody right now, but really quick, I just want to throw this out there. If fight fans want to call in and talk about these matches, you know, they haven't been set in stone or anything like that, but hearing a lot of rumors about Andre Ward and Chad Dawson possibly meeting each other in the ring. The other fight, too, that I like that was kind of thrown out there was Alvarez, Canelo Alvarez possibly getting in with either Paul Williams or, you know, what I'm hearing is still is James Kirtland, you know, is still the guy that's set to fight him and stuff, but they're throwing in Paul Williams if James Kirtland doesn't fall all the way through. So I think those matches are really interesting. I definitely, you know, we're going to put our 2 cents in it right now, but let me see if I can get a hold of a guy that's going to be fighting this Friday night on ESPN. Let's see if we can get a hold of the trainer, James Coward, who's training Tito Serrano, who's going to be facing Kareem Mayfield. And let's see if we can just get him to pick up. I know they I just texted him a little while ago, and he said that it would be cool for us to call him and speak to them.
Hello, and thank you for calling. The person.
Nope. We got the voicemail. Actually, that's a much more better voicemail than we've heard in the past from other fighters here at Gape. You know what I mean? Makes me almost want to call.
Ronnie. My favorite of all time. Ronnie.
You know? This one was almost like I felt like I was calling into a phone sex service or something. Hello.
Oh.
Not that I've heard.
You went
with
it. What if that's your sister, dude? You're trying to be act like the secretary. That's not nice.
Hello. Hello, and thank you for calling. The person you're trying to reach is unavailable. Please leave your name, telephone number, and a brief message, and they will return your call just as soon as possible. Thank you, and have a nice day.
Hi, big boy. Hey, James, this is Dave Duenas from Leaving the Ring and Gabriel Montoya. I like your voicemail here, man. Hey, we're live right now on the air. We're trying to get a hold of you, see if we can talk to you and your fighter who has a fight coming up with Kareem Mayfield this Friday night. Give me a call back, brother.
Call me,
big boy. And Andre Ward, Chad Dawson. You know, I don't know, man. I honestly
168 for the light heavyweight title. It's like it's like an homage to Sugar Ray Leonard.
Yeah.
Donnie Lalonde. They'll do like an anniversary. They'll bring them there.
You know, take away the title though. I mean, is it an interesting fight? I don't find it that interesting, to tell you the truth.
It's the Skill Bowl, as Steve Kim would probably call it. You know, I think it's, you know, if I could think of a guy that would give Andre Ward trouble, most people would say Andre Durrell, but mentally I don't think he's the guy to do the job. He's just maybe physically the guy. I hear he's actually working behind the jab and doing very well, but the other guy would be Chad Dawson to me. He's experienced. He's proven. He's taken on a lot of old veterans. Now it's time to take on a young lion. And I know he's still probably feels like he hasn't completely proven his point, because no one ever looks good beating Bernard Hopkins, even when they beat him. You know, it's an ugly fight.
and you got to like win this one and look good in the next one. I don't know if Andre Ward is going to be any better for him in terms of style, but he's a southpaw, he's the taller man, so they're, you know, that's why they're getting him on the weight and bringing him down. I think Chad could probably make the weight.
That's my concern, though. I mean, this is a big Chad Dawson's not a small guy, you know, and this is a much bigger specimen that he's going to be facing. You know, this is not a Kessler, a Frotch. Frotch was a big dude, but I see Dawson just, you know, I think Dawson can go to cruiserweight and not have a problem with it. You know,
can he go down though? That's the question.
That's the big question there.
I wish it was a 170. I could do 170 because, you know, Andre's got to give him some leeway. I know he won the Super Six, but, and Chad Dawson, that's the thing though. It's kind of a perfect opponent for Andre to kind of leverage this way, because Chad Dawson he's a champion without a country. He's a king without a castle. He's not a draw. He doesn't really put asses in seats, and he's yet to have that electrifying. He's had good fights, but it's been a long time, you know, since he's had good fights. He just had some significant wins now, but no highlight reel. So, and then Ward, you know, he's probably the same way. I mean, he's more of a draw in Oakland. I don't know exactly where they're going to put this fight.
I don't care for the 170, though. You know what I mean? I mean, really, honestly, Andre Ward, he's being undefeated. Okay, I understand what's going on with Butte. He's going to be facing Frotch, so it kind of leaves him out to hanging dry. But if you're going to challenge yourself, if you're going to be daring to be great, go after then his title, for Dawson's title. I mean, I could take you back where Andre Ward has said that, you know, he's looking to move up in weight, but he wasn't saying very soon. But now it looks like it's a little bit, because this is just last year when he was saying, you know, I'm looking to move up in weight, but not anytime soon. I want to clean out my division. I want to dominate my division. But now, you know, that's out the door with the talks of him facing Chad Dawson. If you're going to be bad and you want to be great, I say leave out the whole catchweight and leave out the whole come down to 168. Why don't you just go up then?
Yeah, that's the thing.
I could be wrong. I mean, is it Chad calling him out, or is it Ward calling him out? I don't know.
I think it's hard to tell. I haven't talked to Andre, so I can't speak, and I haven't talked to Chad.
I don't really know
how the deal was put together.
Exactly.
I've been living in Lamont Peterson land. I got to be, you know, full disclosure, folks. I've been watching the fights and everything, but I'm living in Lamont Peterson story land and PED world. You know, following all that stuff, and so a lot of these deals I haven't, you know. Read Steve Kim. That's why, you know, people get mad that I mention him, but that's if you want to know what's going on, read him. Don't ask me this week. I'm kind of lost. I'll be picking it up soon.
I've been meaning to call him and kind of ask him and talk to him a little bit about it. You know, and people have hit us up on Gmail and hit us up on Facebook and whatnot and asked us, you know, about this bout, but. And my response is, you know, I haven't made a call. I haven't spoken to the Ward camp or the Dawson camp at all. I mean, it's, you know, so I can't really speak on it. And I don't really know. I'm pretty sure somebody on Twitter will let us know who called out who. But my feeling is that, you know, I don't see why Chad Dawson would call out the 168 pounder and say he would want to go down. That just doesn't make any sense to me. To me, it would be the smaller guy daring to be great by fighting the bigger guy. That's the way history has repeated itself. So I could be wrong. You know?
It's not pride fighting. It's prize fighting, I think, is what Ward has said in the past. And you know, for him, it's you know, about maximizing, I mean, for everybody, you know, like Floyd Mayweather, high risk, low reward, you know, and you're taking on a dangerous guy in Chad Dawson's style. You know, he's a 170-pound, 5-pound champion. But you just won the Super Six. You just took on more tough guys than he has. Well, I don't know. It's about even. But you at least draw in Oakland, and you have a network that would probably be interested in you. You take your shot, and you see if the guy will say yes. And Chad Dawson and then said yes. So you can't really fault Ward, you know, in that sense. It's sort of like faulting Sugar Ray Leonard for other people folding, you know, to his demands, or even Floyd Mayweather. I signed, or Pacquiao. People always get mad at those negotiations. The guy, this is not a sport. It's a series of individual business transactions. And if you can pull it off, you know, you get right into the contract, and you also have to wear plaid, you know, and the guy says yes, then the guy has to wear plaid, you know, and you do it at 168. So I don't know. It bothers me, and I would like to. If you're fighting for legacy, and if it's about pride fighting, then maybe you make a little less money, or you take a bigger risk, and you move up to 175, like you say, and you go for it. You go for your next belt, your next weight. I mean, you go to the weight, you try to win a world title where you won an Olympic gold at 175. That's what I would expect him to do, but I think Andre's happy being he probably wants to cash in as the 168-pound king for a little while. You know, it's not in winning the title, it's in defending the title. That's where the money is. So maybe it's that. I don't know.
Well, it's – now I remember, you know, Sweet Boxing just tweeted to me. It was Chad Dawson that did call Andre Ward on the post-fight interview after the Hopkins. I remember that, you know, but I'm still baffled by that call-out.
Never really, yeah, the call-out publicly is never – that's not really like a business transaction to me. But thank you, Ryan. But it's, you know, to me, like
it makes no sense.
Like,
why are you
Antonio Margarito,
man?
Well, Antonio Margarito like called out to me with his face, like showed up, you know, hounded him, and Floyd was like, hey, "That's what I do with the De La Hoya deal. We'll let's work it out." And they never did. You know, but then like when Marquez said, "I want to fight Floyd Mayweather," and it's kind of more of a tweak at Manny Pacquiao. Floyd was like, "Oh man, he called me out. I have to fight him." You know, even though he's like a 36-year-old lightweight, you know, moving up the world. You know, it like,
yeah.
So the call out to me is like, it's always like selective. You know, it's like, you know, sometimes it's a good thing for a guy. Sometimes you can just ignore it.
This is the thing too, though. Because I know some folks are going to be like, well, wait a minute. You know, I mean, you were all for, you know, Sergio Martinez willing to drop back down 154 to fight Floyd or Manny Pacquiao. What's the big difference here? Well, here's the difference is that the reason why Sergio Martinez was calling these guys out is because they have a money draw, something that's intriguing, something that's kind of worth trying to risk, you know, your title or your stance in your position and your rankings. Where Chad Dawson, you're calling out Andre Ward. I understand he's undefeated and he's the winner of the Super Six, but money, where's the money at in that?
Well,
where's the logic of it?
I think there's money in it. Yeah, if he did to Andre Ward what Antonio Tarver did to Roy Jones, it'd be a great thing for boxing. Not, you know, not knocking Andre Ward, but it would be that shocking, be that electrifying. He'd be that guy, and I don't know if, you know, personality wise, if he's the guy to carry it. But I personally like Chad's personality. He's like the soft spoken guy who's doesn't really want to talk some shit, but at the same time, like, he's got some anger and he's funny. He's just kind of a different cat, you know. I like Andre Ward too. I mean, the winner of this fight, you know, it, depending on how they won, I think it flips back the other way. If Andre knocks him out in electrifying fashion, we've got this well-spoken dude who's an Olympic gold medalist, our last one, who's also, you know,
he's
a good
that.
Personality for boxing. He's a good guy. He's not a bad guy. But you know what I mean? He's also a good personality. So I think it's a win-win, but it has to be an electrifying fight. Somebody has to win in decisive fashion, in dramatic fashion. Otherwise, it's just the skill bowl and it's two guys going the distance against each other. That does nothing for us.
Fight fan. What do you think? Thumbs up, thumbs down. Call in 347-215-7598. You have my two thumbs down for this matchup here. Andre Ward, I stick around at 168. Leave the 175-pounders alone. I mean, if you're going to pick a 175-pound guy to dance around with in the ring, pick somebody out. I just don't see him beating a Chad Dawson, a southpaw, and that's technically sound when he's gifted with his boxing skills, and he's a big guy. He's a big dude. We saw the way he threw Bernard Hopkins. I just get the sense that the holding that sometimes that Ward likes to do to get his free hand to land some shots, it's not going to work with Dawson and stuff. So, but let's, like I said, let's patch in some fight fans here. And
if I could stop talking.
So let's patch. Let's get CT. You want to talk? CT, you're on live right now on Leaving the Ring, brother. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you guys doing tonight?
Doing good, brother. How you doing?
Doing very well, thank you.
I'm all right. Yeah, you guys answered some of the questions that I was going to ask, you know, about the upcoming fights and stuff like that. I was going to ask also, do you guys know exactly who Marquez is fighting, or is it just up in the air if it's Judo or Morales?
I'm not sure, yeah, at this point. It was Judo.
I think it's just more rumors right now to get the, you know what I mean, to get the juices
Judo
up.
Judo was the front runner, and then, like, he wanted too much money, and then the fight was off, and then the last I heard was that he was being talked back into it. But that's the last I heard, and that was, like, Monday. So I don't know is my answer. I'd like to see Judo versus Marquez. I would really like to see Judo versus Marquez. That would be a fun fight.
That would be a really fun fight. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, too. I mean, like, stylistically, I was just thinking, like, two different ways. I mean, like, you know, usually Judo has problems with people who, you know, rush towards him or, you know, grind him down a little bit. And you look at Marquez as a counterpuncher. And I think it kind of, you know, Judo with the hand speed and his awkwardness and stuff like that will give Marquez a little bit of trouble. You know what I mean?
You have two guys that can stand in front of each other and box and make the other guy miss by an inch and come back with some serious firepower. And Judo's got legit knock-you-out power.
Right.
That's a fun fucking fight. I mean, it's a phone booth fight, you know? I'm Leaving in the Ring. But I think it's a really good fight. It's that kind of fight.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would hope it would be that fight. I mean, what else would you like to see Marquez in?
Right. I mean, I wouldn't want to see him against Morales. I mean,
right.
Definitely Judo, though. Also,
I don't know. Morales, you wouldn't want to see him against Morales? You think Morales is that dumb?
I don't know. I mean, I think it'd be a fun fight, but it just kind of leaves you back of thinking like, you know, wow, what if this had happened, you know, what, 5, 6, 7, 8 years back? It'd definitely be a fun fight, but I think the Judo would be just a lot more fun to watch.
How about Conan Garcia? Is that in the talks or?
You know what? There was something that was thrown out by the WBC, and we got it on the Leaving the Ring site. Yeah, let me see if I could pull it up. And what I'm understanding is that the WBC is kind of blocking that happening and kind of demanding, if I'm right about that. Yeah, to get his shot against Green.
Okay.
So let me see. I gotta find it. I know they sent one out for the Matarossian and the WBC.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it on the site, but I haven't been able to. I mean, at this point, I mean, it just would be this flat out larceny if they don't get a Joe Giolusigan.
I know, right?
Mandatory challenger. Guy needs his shot, you know. I heard that was a rumor that was thrown out there by a few people, that Danny Garcia might be the replacement opponent, like, you know, late June. That's possible, or early July, something like that, I think, at this point. You know, I feel bad for Khan. You know, he didn't do anything wrong. You know, he went through training camp, although, you know, I'd heard that his camp wasn't all that great, that he wasn't looking quite as sharp. I heard that from a couple sources. I didn't see it for myself, so, you know, people always talk in boxing. But maybe they got away with one a little bit here, but, you know, Lamont Peterson, he didn't get away with one. So we're just kind of stuck without a fight. It's kind of brutal, you know. But hopefully I think people come out of this week with more education, the last 2 weeks, smarter than they were about the situation, and kind of realizing that, particularly for the writers, this is standard operating equipment, you know, like either standard equipment, knowledge of PEDs in boxing or in your combat sports. You got to know about it because the fighters know about it. The trainers know about it, or some of them do. I still think that my theory is that Barry Hunter and Lamont Peterson were ill-informed about what they were going to take. That's just my take on it at this point. I think he got misdiagnosed and given medicine that he didn't need.
That's just kind of how I feel, you know. And like I said, there's what you know and what you can print.
I was actually talking to this guy about the fight between Peterson and Khan at the gym the other day. And he said to me, you can see Peterson was on something because of how relentless he was in that fight. He was kind of taking punches and just coming right back. And I was saying to him, well, I mean, when I saw the fight, I picked Peterson to win that night anyways. But it was like, I just know he can adapt to a certain style. You know what
I've
mean?
I've heard really, that. Yeah, I've heard that too, but I always refer back to, well, did you see he was the same way with Bradley? He was the
right.
same way with Victor Ortiz. I mean, that scenario
well,
to me
also,
out the door to me, you know?
Well, also, I look at Amir Khan in that fight, and I was watching the fight again last night in the 11th round, and Khan is taking some hellacious shots. There's one where, like, Peterson pretty much measures him with his left, and they're on the ropes, and he just unloads with a right hand on Khan. And
right.
Khan takes it and then just gets right back on his bicycle and starts going. You know, I mean, I'm not pointing fingers, but I think something that we all need to see, I want to see it, I'm probably going to have to subpoena it, is the medicals for that DC fight for both fighters.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know the TE ratios. You know, I like a fat kid wants candy. I want to see those medicals. You know?
Yeah.
Okay. I just like talking about one more thing, the Bradley and Pacquiao face-off.
Right.
I think Bradley handled himself, you know, like a professional, you know what I mean? Some of the questions that were kind of thrown at him, it's almost like Kellerman was, like, doubting him, you know what I mean? Kind of saying, like, well, what are you doing in the ring with this guy? Not in those words, but
right.
kind of, like, you know, saying to Bradley, do you think he can handle his hand speed and his punching power? It's like, you didn't ask Pacquiao none of those questions. You only asked him, what about the head, you know what I mean? The headbutts and stuff. I think Bradley brings a lot to the table, and I think Pacquiao and Roach shouldn't take this fight lightly. I almost look at this fight as almost like, I mean, not in, you know, because I think Bradley's skilled more, but almost in a sense like the Acapito Sanchez fight with Pacquiao. It's almost like that type of style, but a little bit more skill. You know, I see a lot more skill, and I think you know all that. I think foot movement is the key here. I think Pacquiao hasn't fought nobody with this type of foot movement in a while, you know. I mean, with the speed of his foot movement. I think it's going to give Pacquiao a lot of trouble the way, you know, Bradley's able to move in and out quick.
Yeah.
He's quick with the foot and hand in one motion, you know what I mean?
And compact. I like
right.
that he's compact. He reminds me, too, of like the Spartan phalanx, you know. He comes in and his hands are tight around him. He's like, you know, all kind of shielded up, and then he comes out with a little punch here and there, and he's just very physical. When he's coming up on you, he's coming up on you, and he's slamming into you like a Hopkins, and manhandling you a little bit. I really like Bradley in this fight, dude. I think he's the kind of guy that's going to crowd Pacquiao, show him no respect, and rough him up. And Manny's going to be very uncomfortable in this fight. I can't wait.
The thing, too, that I like about what Bradley brings to this here, and I haven't seen anybody really even point this out, is that Bradley gets underneath your punches, and that's how he closes the distance, you know? He jabs upwards, not straight across. He's jabbing up, and he makes guys actually back up. He did that with Devon Alexander. He did that with Lamont Peterson. And I think guys don't know how to handle that. Guys don't know how to, you know, kind of deflect that away. And with Freddie Roach, I remember when we had him on here, he completely disrespected Timothy Bradley when we mentioned him. He was like, who in the hell is he? Blah, 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 blah. And sometimes I think trainers forget. It's not about the large crowd that comes behind him and the entourage that makes a fighter. It's what the fighters do in the ring. And I got the whole sense is that Freddie just completely disregard what this guy's been doing, the work he's been putting in to get to this point. Even with Max Kellerman, I got that same sense you got too, where it was just like, you know, like, how did you get here? Oh, big deal. And I'm going to follow what the rest of the fans are saying about you, is that you have no fighting chance. That just tells you that they didn't do their homework. This is a fight that I'm still, you know, and I've said this on Leaving Ring, I've said this to my partner here, I did not believe they were going to sign this. You know, and Freddie Roach, he could probably change his tune now by saying that, well, we took it because there was nothing else left. No, dude, you took it because this is what Top Rank made you sign on to do. And I still believe this is not the fight they wanted, because they see what we're seeing. This is a young gun that's coming to win. He's not just going to be satisfied with that payday. This guy really wants it. And you saw that face expression somebody put out that he needs to get grow back his mustache. I thought that was hilarious. Because, you know, Timothy doesn't have that face of hardness. You know, he's got like those little chipmunk cheeks and stuff. But at the same time, he's got some intense eyes. And like I said, he was burning some holes through Pacquiao. He was really like – his stance and his look alone was basically saying, I'm coming to fight, dude. I'm coming to fight.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad some fighters like that towards Pacquiao. And I like the way, like I said, I like the way Bradley handled it. He had really good answers, you know, without, you know, getting too angry at Max Kellerman. He had all the right answers. Like, I couldn't stand those type of questions. I probably would have went off on Max Kellerman if I was Bradley. But I'm glad, you know, I'm proud, you know, at the way he handled himself. And I look forward to, I'm going to a party that night, and I'm pretty sure everybody's thinking Pacquiao's going to knock him out, but I'm probably going to be the only one in that whole party going for Bradley.
Hey, you're not going to be alone, man. Just remember that. I'm rooting for Bradley. I'm picking Bradley. And I'm not going to give my official pick of what I'm thinking. I just got to tell you, there's a round that I'm picking that I think he's going to stop. He's going to stop Manny Pacquiao and stuff.
You're picking Pacquiao by KO? Or Bradley by KO? Wow.
Yeah.
I'm not picking him. Well,
I know.
I'm not that bold. Yeah, I'm just going with Bradley. I'm like leaning Bradley right
no,
now.
No, I'm picking him by KO, man. But I'm not going to tell you around yet and stuff. Hey, CT, thanks, brother, for calling in. It's always a pleasure, man, when we have you come on here and speak to us here on Leave It a Ring.
All right, thanks a lot.
Linus hits us up and says, who needs a hard face when he has a hard head? Still thinks Pacquiao. Patinizes him.
That's true.
That's a great term.
True, man. Let me see. Awesome.
I don't think he hatinizes him. He doesn't expose his chin like that. I mean, Ricky Hatton, you know, it was like, yeah, he had like a bullseye on his chin. It was always kind of up a little bit. He started to dip his head. And that was all about footwork, too, that knockout. Pacquiao did the classic wild card. Like, you were in The Karate Kid 2, where he gave him that little drum. You know, this is the secret to our family's karate. And it was like this thing that swang back and forth on this drum. The wild card has, like, that move. And they teach it to every fighter. Shane, the little one-eyed guy that was on, you know, 24/7 and on Freddie Roach. I was, like, my trainer, him and Pep. And they teach the same thing. They learned it from Freddie. It's like, the 1-2-3. And you duck under and out, you know. So you like you throw a jab, a right hand, you throw the hook, and then you duck towards the armpit, and you slide out underneath the hook as the guy's returning. And it's the basis of the Freddie Roach offense. And that's that's what got Ricky Hatton. And I saw that same combination being practiced with a couple flourishes different, a couple extra punches over and over again. Freddie Roach and Manny Pacquiao doing the pads, and you can see the pattern. It was crazy watching him knock out Hatton because it was like Hatton didn't even need to be doing anything. He didn't need to be there. Like, Manny was just throwing punches in the spaces that his hand had been taught to throw them. It was pretty awesome to see. Like, it was the exact combination.
Exactly, you know. And really quick, D-Fobs following us on Twitter. He put thumbs way up. Don't hate on the skill. Boxing is a science. Talking about the Andre Ward and Chad Dawson. I'm not hating on it, man. I don't think that Andre should be that bold. That's what I was trying to say. Don't be that bold, man. There's other guys out there that you can certainly dance with. I think that's a bad matchup for Andre Ward going against Chad Dawson. He's a big kid, you know. James Coward just texted me right now. He says that he's available, and he'd love to talk to us here on Leaving the Ring. So, I don't know, Gabe, you want to give that another shot?
You have the number?
I have the number.
I have this. I was going to go into the fight schedule because it's 7:30. But if you want to go there, you know, however we want to do this, man. This is just a free flow. I'm just here answering calls, answering texts, getting the schedule ready. This show is like a live animal. I don't know if anybody caught it, but in Modesto B this last week, there was an article on Dave Duenas, our owner and my co-host. It was awesome, man. I was really impressed by the guy's article, you know.
Yeah, James Burns. They caught wind of the radio show. You know, first off, all credit to everybody that's involved with Leaving the Ring. You know, it's not, and I keep repeating myself to Modesto B about this and stuff, is that, you know, we're a couple guys that just completely love this sport, you know, and you know, I gave credit, I praised a whole lot of credit to you, Gabriel Montoya, to all the guys that are staffed by Leaving in the Ring, and especially the listeners, the people that tune in, that, you know, if they're in the UK, they tune, you know, they stay up to 1 in the morning. If you're the East Coast, they stay up to 8 o'clock, and they stay on with us for 3 hours, you know. And people driving, listening to us to work, they're downloading us. If it wasn't for them, Modesto B and a few other news outlets would have caught wind of us and not contact us, because we just kind of showed that boxing is not dead. It's still here. You know, there's still a lot to talk about. I know it has a dark corner, and you know, and it's normally a corner, an alleyway that nobody wants to walk in, but we ask people to be brave, just like the caller that called in. You know, he said, hey, I haven't been watching boxing a whole lot, but I'm starting to, you know, do it now, et cetera, et cetera. He got brave. He said, I'm gonna try it out. You know, I don't have a flashlight with any batteries, but I know it's a dark alley, but I'm gonna try it out. You know, I mean, the worst is gonna happen, you're gonna run into the dark cloud, Gabriel Montoya, and he's gonna rain on you. That's about it.
Sure. And you know, and I'm actually very sunny these days. The only problem I had with that article is it didn't mention that I'm single, and I'm just trying to get that, you know,
yeah,
out there to as many places as I possibly can. Other than that, I think they did mention Matchboxing, which,
you
know,
I know. I've noticed you have the single look on your, you know, on your profile. You got the single pose, you know, the single shirt on. Yeah,
yeah,
it works for you, man.
I'm feeling a little. Well, I've got the, you know, just me looking through the ropes, but that's pretty much how I look all the time without the glasses. Lost a little weight, you know.
Yeah,
that's kind of funny. Fighters like pay attention to weight, you know. And I walked in and Ola looked at me. It was like, you lost weight.
Why are you cruising?
Thank you for noticing,
Ola.
Oh,
man. Yo, James, how you doing,
brother? What's happening, my man?
Good, man. Hey, how you doing? I got my co-host here, Gabriel Montoya. You're live right now with us on Leaving the Ring. I was hoping to catch the girl that answers the phone for you, man. You know?
You like that, huh?
I like that, dude. So don't be alarmed. Don't be alarmed if I'm calling you at 2 in the morning just to listen to the voicemail, okay?
I got you, brother. I got you.
My number, don't
What's
always
up, Gabriel? How you doing?
I'm doing great.
How you guys
How
doing?
You?
I'm doing great.
You know, really quick, let me introduce you to most folks out there that if they're not aware of who you are, your coach, James Coward. You know, you're the hand mitt. I know you have a certain phrase of the hand mitt work that you do. What is it called again?
Technical mitt work.
Your technical mitt work. And I don't know if you remember, Gabriel, who this is and stuff. You know,
I do.
Yeah, we know he's advertised. We advertise him on the magazine. We advertise him on the site. And James,
stalking him on Facebook right now.
Stalking him on Facebook right now. let's take this back to this fight. You got Serrano, and you've worked with other fighters. One, preferably your wife, who was an amateur, who's an amateur decorated amateur fighter. Okay, and I had a chance to be on Punches and Bunches, which is another boxing radio show that I tune in with Tony, the host Tony Whitby. They were already talking about this fight here. And I mentioned this here. I was like, this is a great fight because the storyline is pretty good here, where you got one trainer that's already established, which is Virgil Hunter, working with Kareem Mayfield. And Kareem's got that Sugar Shane Mosley style. He's got that look, you know, throws a punch every 30 seconds. The overhand comes over the top. But then you got your style, which is kind of almost the adopted style of Floyd Mayweather, you know. Being elusive, doing a bunch of stuff. Now, Serrano, though, how long have you had him, and how much have you put input into that data? Because that's what makes this fight a little interesting, and it also, to me, this is kind of your coming out party, because you're actually going up against another trainer that has been named Trainer of the Year.
Absolutely. Let me start by saying this, and I saw Virgil a little earlier tonight. We were talking for a little bit, and He's the gentleman all the way. He's a great guy, very humble. And I made it clear to him from the get go. I said, listen, it's an honor just to be on the other side of the ring with a coach of his stature and the things that he's done. I mean, he's done wonderful things with Andre Ward, and I know he's worked with other fighters and now working with Kareem. And Kareem's a good guy too. You know, I had the chance to meet him during Danny Garcia's preparation, his camp, And Tito Serrano was also one of the sparring partners, along with Kareem Mayfield. And so I got a chance to meet him there. And he's a great guy. Great guy. He's a hard worker in the gym. And going into this fight, I mean, for me and for Tito, I've had him for 10 weeks. So I've had a lot of time with him. And, you know, a lot of things we worked on really was shortening up his punches and putting together a good game plan to go out there with and box and get back to boxing versus, you know, just trying to walk a guy down in the ring. So his defense, we worked on it. And, I mean, you come into something like this with a fighter and, you know, they're used to fighting a certain way for so many years. I had the chance to work with him 3 fights back, but I was strictly, you know, his pad guy. And so my input was limited. You know, I could do what I do, but I really couldn't work with him on strategy and other things. But now coming in as his trainer, it gave me the opportunity to get him to myself and really put the work into him that I wanted to put in. So look for, you know, a little different fighter than what you've seen. A lot more boxing. You're going to see a little slickness with him. And he's punching hard. He came in at 139.6. Kareem also came in around the same weight, so they're both in excellent condition, and they're ready to get it on.
Now, I mentioned this before, which is that if any time you're going to bring in a new trainer and bring in new methods, you need the right opponent to kind of face that off against, because a lot of times you don't want to do that with somebody that can capitalize on you learning on the job, right, with the new tactics that you know, you're placing on the kid. But to right. me, this is actually Kareem to me, and this is no disrespect to Kareem. I respect him. You know, guy mm-hmm. laces up gloves. He has the touch of death when he lands that overhand right. He could put you to sleep.
Exactly.
But he's the mm-hmm. guy. I think he's the right opponent for Serrano to try out the new stuff that you've been teaching him. Am I right or am I wrong about
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. You know what? That's a perfect point to bring up. And you know, again, no disrespect to Kareem, because you know, he's a hell of a fighter. He's tough, and I know Virgil's an excellent trainer. So you know, we know we're not going to be out there against a one-handed fighter, which is what he's predominantly been. You know, that's been with his success has been using that right hand and kind of pawing with the jab. So we know he's going to come with a little something different, and I expect nothing less than that with Virgil Hunter as his trainer. But to go back to what you were saying, he is the perfect guy to go in there with and kind of put into play the things that I'm working on with Tito Serrano, because, you know, I know he's going to come at us. I know he's quick, and I also know, you know, he has some good fundamental boxing skills. He brings that to the table. And again, no disrespect to him, but it's not like we're going in there against a guy who we know is just going to box. We know Kareem can switch it up. He can go from boxing to making it into a rough and tumble type of a fight. So, you know, again, for us, it's going to give us a chance to kind of showcase what we've been working on. And to be honest with you, it's really going to be a good test for Tito to see where he's at in the world ranking with some of the, you know, the top fighters out there, because winning this fight takes him to the next level. For both these guys, this is a huge opportunity, because it's gonna boost them right up in the rankings in the 140-pound division.
I got a few more questions if you want to ask anything, but I got some follow ups if you.
Okay.
Well, no, hop in. You guys are. I'm just kind of actually just listening to you guys talk and just enjoying the flow. But let me ask you this: when you step in with a guy, and you're kind of not reclaiming him in a sense, but you're kind of taking him in a new direction. I mean, how long do you think it takes for you guys to truly click? And for, is it just depend fighter to fighter taking over a guy, or is it? Do you think there's a particular process that you go through, like 3 fights or something?
There's a, you know, it's a good question, and it, you know what, it really does depend on the way the fighter and the trainer click. We had a good vibe when we started working together 3 fights ago, and we really clicked on a lot of the things that we were working on. But again, I was very limited in how far I could really go, because, you know, coming into his camp as his pad guy, you know, I got to play my position, you know, and not overstep my bounds. So
rule
in this
number,
case,
rule
though,
number 9 of the gym, right?
Right.
Exactly. You know, you play your position, and you know, good things happen, and this has happened from that. You know, I come back, and here I am, you know, in the front seat. But going back to your question, it really does depend on the fighter. It could take a year for a fighter to really get comfortable with changing his style, so to speak, to kind of fall into play with what the coach wants. Or it could take, you know, 6 or 10 weeks of hard work. And because the fighter and the trainer are actually really gelling and they're on the same page and the fighter is really open-minded and willing to change and learn, you know, that makes a world of difference. Tito's the kind of kid where, you know, he's very open to learning new things. He's a hard worker. He's diligent in the gym. And he's the kind of guy, if you teach him something, he's going to keep doing it and doing it until he gets it right. And so that's, for me, is a joy as a coach working with someone like that. So, like I said, I don't expect him to go out there and do everything that we worked on. But, you know, he's going to be able to execute a lot of the stuff that we put into play when he gets in the ring tomorrow night.
You know, the one thing I haven't seen from you yet is how you work your fighter's legs and how they move around in the ring. I've seen the hat mitts, which is fascinating, and I use some of your technique with kids that I've worked in the gym. I've used a lot of your technique when it comes to my son. I'm really curious about this here, and I don't know if you guys thought about this. You know, well, you actually said something that was going to lead into the question I'm going to ask is that you said about Kareem Mayfield here. You know, he has two different styles. One, he likes to fight in the outsides because he can get that leverage and that range to land that overhand right, which is his favorite in money punch there. But he also has got a left hook that he likes to land from the outside as well. He kind of has this, like, it's not a darting. He doesn't dart in with it, but he kind of slides to you with that leading left hook. But then there's the ugly side of Kareem, which is the mauling side and wear out your legs, where he makes you pull away so he can throw the overhand right, and it kind of follows up and catches you off guard.
Right.
The mauling part, in order for you to, from in my opinion, in order for a fighter to kind of weather through all of that, the leg conditioning has to be really up. I mean, far up.
It's
is
true.
That something that you
that
guys worked on and thought about?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, in the last three fights, you know, Tito hadn't really been doing any type of strength and conditioning work at all. And so coming into this camp, that was the first thing I started working with him on, a lot of strength and conditioning exercises. In fact, the first part of the first 5 weeks of camp, that was the primary focus. 3 days a week was strength and conditioning, and 2 days a week was boxing. So that was a big part of it, working the legs, a lot of core work, squat thrusts and things like that. Not a lot of weights, but, you know, a lot of freestanding exercises with the medicine ball, but explosive stuff that, you know, a lot of times you use for football, for running backs and things like that, sprints and things, just to get the legs, you know, in a position where he can move in and out explosively. And if he has to get in the clinch and actually has to do some muscling and working on the inside, you know, he can do it. So that was definitely something I wanted to put into play as soon as I found out, you know, I was going to be working with him. And that was even before I knew exactly who the opponent was, because we weren't sure at the time. Initially, they were thinking of the opponent, D'Airy John or D'Airy Jean from Montreal, Quebec, who was 30-0 with 14 knockouts. So we weren't sure about Kareem. And then, you know, the Kareem came to the table, and we ended up signing the deal for that fight. So both fighters, we knew either way it was going to be a really good fighter in front of us. And, you know, I wanted to make sure that, you know, he was in top condition for it.
Well, I only got one more question for you, and then obviously we got to let you go. We have our fight schedule, and we're at the tail end of our show, and you got to rest for tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is something heavy for you, man. I mean, this here, I don't know. I would be a little, in my opinion, I'd be really nervous about this because, like I said, you know, you throw out DVDs and you do show other folks. Do you feel kind of like this is the make it break it for you to see whether or not the method that you do kind of shine out there, does it really work?
I don't look at it as a make it break it, but I look at it as the opportunity to really to make and showcase you know, the work that, you know, I put in and the hard work that the fighters put in. And of course, the other, you know, guys in the camp who've done their part in getting him ready. So for me, you know, if he goes out there and he executes, you know, the things that he needs to, and he's got the heart of a lion, and, you know, he wins this fight, like I told him, you know, we don't go out there to lose, but win or lose, as long as he does everything that we train to do, and win or lose, the best man's going to win the fight. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, as long as we leave everything in the ring and you've given it everything you can give, then I'm going to be a happy camper either way. I mean, we'd love to, you know, we're planning to come out with the victory and bring the NABO belt back to Philadelphia. That's the plan. But, you know, like I always say, anything can happen on any given night when you step in that squared circle, especially when you have two top-class, you know, high-class fighters like this who have, you know, decent punching power between the two of them. You know, anything can happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I mean, in some weird way, I think that Tito, he has the right opponent in front of him to try out these new methods that he's learned. But you're up against a seasoned trainer. This may not be the right opponent for you at this moment, but we'll find out Friday night, man. I'm excited for you, brother. I'm excited.
Yeah, so am I, brother. I'm up for the challenge, and it, like I said, it's an honor to be in the ring with Virgil, and you know, to get out there and do what we do. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Journey of the trainer, man. The journey of the trainer is just as rough as the journey of the fighter. You guys are training for gold, you know, for the right guidance to help you display what your knowledge out there. I wish you all
very
the luck. It's kind of cool to have you on the show finally and see what you have to say and your whole philosophy. And I wish you well, man. I wish you well.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And, yeah, hopefully, like, we'll get together again and talk even after this and talk about how everything went.
Absolutely,
all right?
Brother. All right, man. You take
all
care.
Right.
We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, you too.
All
thanks
right,
a lot, guys. Take
there
care.
You go.
All right.
Coach James Cowards, man. I mean, I've known this guy. I think going on 5 years, if I remember correctly, and followed his DVDs and when he even started up on YouTube. Really humble cat, man. Really, really humble. Want to wish him the best. And I'm really interested about this fight. I'm excited about this fight. Let's go with that fight schedule, brother.
All right. Just tonight, I got to throw it down. You know, at the Lakeside Golf Course in Burbank, California. Alexander Flores, 8-0, versus Joey Montoya, 4-0-3. He's out of Colorado Springs. I don't know if it's related to him, but he's got my name. So go Joey Montoya. May 18th, Friday, 2012, at the Times Union Center in Albany, New York. On ESPN2's Friday Night Fights, Raymond Serrano, 18-0, versus Kareem Mayfield, 15-0-1, Battle of Unbeatens. I'm not making a pick on this one. I'm kind of leaning towards Kareem Mayfield, but you know, after the interview, you know, I kind of like Serrano's chances. Mayfield's a guy that kind of lets you dictate things sometimes. He kind of waits for his spots. But he's with Virgil Hunter, very smart guy. I hear great things about him coming out of the gym. I'm going to go with him, I guess.
I think he's been with Virgil. I think this is what maybe the third fight they're leading into now.
It takes three fights. That's how I always
tell. Yeah, they say it always takes three fights, but my problem is that when we had Aloha on with us here, he mentioned something about being a sparring partner, and sometimes you get stuck in that mode. To me, Kareem, he's been stuck in that mode for a very long time, and he's aware of it. We've talked about it. I mean, myself and him, you know, when I've seen him at his fights, and we've sat back in the locker rooms, and, you know, he's a good – all around that, he's a great kid. Kareem is one of those kids, man, that he could take the truth, you know. And he's criticized himself. His brother has criticized them, and they understand their position, and they understand what they lack and what they don't lack, you know. And I'm just afraid that having those spurts of combos that are not even combos, they're just one punch at a time.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
First.
It's going to cost
them.
Yeah, it's just going to cost him, you know. And he's been fighting guys that had a trail of losses, where this time around he's getting a guy that's undefeated and could possibly either ruin himself by trying a new method or have a difference of confidence. And the pat work and all the other things that Coach James Coward is bringing, it could benefit him because he's going to have a chance to show what he's been learning, because Mayfield is going to allow him to do that. And that's why I'm concerned. If Mayfield does that, I'm going with Serrano. And unfortunately, I think that Serrano is going to have his ticket just because Mayfield likes to lay back. He likes to have a little 420 in him.
Well, we'll see. You know, we'll see what Virgil Hunter's got for him. And that guy knows how to really, you know, get his guy across the finish line. So we'll see. I mean, he did it with, Gonzalez. Maybe he can do it here. I don't know. Well, I think it's going to be a fun fight. You know, undefeateds are always fun because
absolutely.
Neither of them know how to lose, you know.
Oh, dude, what a big test. First time on television for James Coward to go up against Virgil Hunter. That alone would make my, you know, it'd make me shrink. I'm 5'9", but I'd be like 5'6", walking into the ring, you know, waving at Virgil. Hey, what's up,
Virgil's
buddy?
Virgil's a big man.
Yeah, he is.
It's important that we've got Jason Escaleto, 13-0, versus Nick Brinson, 8-1-1. Don't know much about Escaleto, but I'll go with the chalk and pick him. In support also there is David Telesco, 37-1, versus Vincent Miranda, 14-1. And Kenny, I hope he doesn't fight like Richard Abriel, 11-5-1, versus Brian Abraham, 6-11-2. At the Auditorio Plaza in Condesa, Mexico City, Mexico, on Telemundo, Mauricio Pintor, 17-0-1, versus Ivan Cano, 10-4. I've got Cano's in my family. I'm rooting for Cano. I'm just going bias tonight. It's all Mexican bias. At the Seminole Hard Rock Casino in Hollywood, Florida, at the Argenis Mendez, 19-2, versus Hector Velasquez, 51-17-3, for the Ring Magazine, number 7 junior lightweights in action versus unranked. And that's kind of your weekend. At the Melbourne Pavilion in Flemington, Australia, Will Tomlinson, 18-0-1, versus Daniel Ruiz, 27-4-1. So it's at the young prospects getting some action against a wily veteran. And this guy's awesome. Brad Pitt, 12-0, versus Joel Casey, 15-9-3. No relation, I imagine. And that's your weekend fight schedule.
Well, there you go, fight fans. Be sure to pick up your Undisputed Fight magazine. Be sure to tune in to Noche de Boxeo every Monday night at 5 o'clock Pacific time and 8 o'clock Eastern time. And we're on every Thursday night, 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time. The Boxing Fix is to air this Sunday. It didn't happen last Sunday on Mother's Day because Josh McDaniel came down with the flu. We came down with something, and the guy was just not feeling well. I mean, I had a chance to speak to him, and I just called the shot of not doing it because we want to make sure they come out nice and good, you know, for the fight fans to tune in and listen to. So anyways, you guys have a good weekend. Don't drink and drive. Everybody be cool, and keep spreading the word about boxing.
It's true. Yeah, man. I'll catch up with you. Great show as always. 3 hours. It is actually enough. You know, I would say it doesn't feel like enough, but, man, we pack a lot in those 3 hours. Dave,
yeah, we do. We didn't even have a chance to talk about Canelo and Paul Williams, but we'll do it next week.
Well, we got a couple minutes. I like which one would you rather have, Kirkland or Paul?
I like them both, to tell you the truth. I mean, I want to see how well Canelo handles the pressure against a Kirkland, a big, strong 154 that comes in at 160. How well does he do, and is his combos are going to be coming off fluently against a guy that's going to be in your chest? Paul Williams, tall, lanky, you know, where his punches, his combinations are going to have to be a little bit different because now he's punching combinations upwards, not downwards like he did with Mosley. But how well is he going to receive a tall, lanky guy that has an okay, decent jab but throws a volume of punches? Interesting fights, man.
Yeah, I think so. I would say, you know, I don't know. Yeah, Paul Williams.
Even Lara. Some guys were throwing out Lara out there, too. You know, Arislandi Lara.
I think he might be the most dangerous guy for Canelo right now. I mean,
yeah, I
Kirkland,
think he's the most dangerous,
you know,
guy for everybody.
But I'm curious what Kirkland would be like, though, because, you know, Canelo is not Carlos Molina. He's not really like a defensive wizard.
Right.
He's willing to trade. But he's very good with his offense. His defense is his offense. That jab is educated. He almost fights like a little Klitschko. He's very economic, very economical, like kind of the way Vlad Klitschko fights. Stays behind the jab, waits for that right hand. He doesn't take a lot of chances, so he doesn't give his opponent a lot of chances. And what Kirkland's going to do is kind of push him around, hustle on him, and try to get him to open up and give him spots. It's an interesting fight. Both guys like to go to the body. It's going to be who can take whose body punches. It's going to be a body punching festival. It will depend on the ref. He's going to call a lot of low blows. I'll be calling for Canelo. Kirkland will definitely be the underdog. With Paul Williams, it's Golden Boy versus Heyman. That's an interesting fight. Are they serving up Paul Williams? I think both guys are kind of being served up to Canelo in a sense, and you got to assess the danger with one, either guy. I don't know. And it's going to be pay-per-view, probably.
You know, all the criticism that we've given Canelo, I know I've been a very, very heavy on the kid. I give him kudos for even asking for either one of these fights. I mean,
I lost some patience in there, but you know, in the Shane Mosley fight is what it is. But yeah, you got to give him credit. They've been building towards this. He said he's been building towards this, and here it comes. I'm excited for this period of his career, dude. It's going to be good.
Same thing. We're going to find out a lot about him. I'm with those big old soccer legs. I want to see if he's the one that's going to be pushing back James Kirkland, because we haven't seen him really do a whole lot of that. We've seen the smaller guys push him back, but I think it's because he understands that he could probably get in those shots a little easier against the smaller guys because they're hunching down. With tall, big guys like Kirkland and Paul Williams, it's a little bit different. This is a different matchup for him, a different look. Really curious. Anyways, we only got about 5 more seconds, so everybody, good night. Call back in Thursday night, 3 hours of boxing talk here on Leaving the Ring. Your host, Dave Duenas, and your host, Gabriel Montoya, the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. You guys have a good night.
Peace.